Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 11th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-POUND. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's efforts to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. We're going to pick up tonight's scripture reading in John chapter 12. We left off in verse 11 last week, so we'll pick up on verse 12. So it'll be Gospel of John chapter 12. We're going to read verses 12 through 33. Okay, on the next day, much people that will come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, "Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that cometh in the name of the Lord." And Jesus, when he had found a young ass, sat thereon, as it is written, "Fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, the King cometh, sitteth upon an ass colt." These things understood not his disciples at the first. But when Jesus was glorified, then remembered that these things were written of him, and that they had done these things unto him. The people, therefore, that was with him, when he called Lazarus out of his grave, and raised him from the dead, bear record. For this cause the people also met him, for they had heard that he had done this miracle. The Pharisees, therefore, said among themselves, "Perceive ye how ye prevail nothing? Behold, the world is gone after him." And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. The same came therefore to Philip, which was of Bethsaida of Galilee, and desired him, saying, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and again Andrew and Philip tell Jesus. And Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Truly, truly, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall onto the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it. He that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servants be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." Then came there a voice from heaven, saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." The people, therefore, that stood by and heard it said that it thundered. Others said, "An angel spoke to him." Jesus answered and said, "This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of the world. Now shall the prince of the world be cast out. And if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." This he said, signifying what death he should die. Gospel of John, chapter 12, verses 12 through 33. All right, we'll pick up the rest of that next Monday. Okay, I don't have any particular topic, but we'll see where that might go in a few minutes. Jan, are you here? I didn't even look to see. Yeah, I guess I see you out there. Do we have any...
Yes.
Anybody that needs to make any statements, or you have any comments or statements or call or questions or whatever?
I have several questions for you. I don't have any announcements.
Okay.
Okay. You want first question? Ready?
Okay.
I have been studying numerous common law remedies concerning the commercial courts. Would appreciate feedback on dealing with post-judgment writ of garnishment, court hearing objection to garnishment, seizure of driver's license and so forth from third-party debt collector attorney, and last hearing on objection to writ date February 25th.
Okay, I'm not too sure I understand the question. Try that again.
Okay.
And let's take want to try to explain it in other words that you understand, but go ahead.
Okay, let's try a third of it at a time. I've been studying numerous common law remedies concerning commercial courts. Apparently, they tried to post a judgment of garnishment against somebody. So you'd appreciate feedback on dealing with post-judgment writ of garnishment court hearing objections to the garnishment.
Okay. It almost sounded like he was in a traffic court. He said something about a license there, too, didn't he?
Okay. That was the next part of the question. Apparently, they seized his driver's license from a third-party debt collector attorney.
Yeah, this all sounds like it's out of town courts, probably. I mean, he didn't tell us courts were in or anything.
No.
I don't have the detail, really, to give any thoughts or ideas on what I might do. But but I can only say there's one thing. You know, the more and more I study, the more and more I see how deep that they have entrenched this statutory process within our courts and have totally hidden. And actually, they sealed up the doors and the windows or any place where you can possibly see where there might be what might be called a court of record, which, of course, is a court of natural law, a common law court. And until we solve that problem, we're going to continue to have these problems. And what I have seen in the past is sometimes we come to people have come up with thoughts and ideas and use them in the courts, and sometimes they work, and then they become aware of it. These judges, I understand, they occasionally go for additional training, maybe a weekend, a week, I don't know. But I hear that they go for training from time to time, especially the town judges. And so they probably keep up on all of these different things that take place and how to counteract all of us individuals who are coming trying to make our position that they don't have the power, they don't have the authority. We haven't given them any consent that we should have to be partners or partakers in their courts. And so when something works once, maybe the next time, as time goes on, it doesn't work very well. Exactly what kind of a case this is, I don't know. I have no details. I haven't given any details of what court hearing took place or how they went about. This was not a judge. What was it? A judgment that they had taken? What did he call it?
Garnishment.
Well, that's a judgment, the garnishment.
Yep.
I don't know what court or what's involved. So I couldn't even respond any further than that. Thanks.
Okay. The next question is about the SAFE Act lawsuit. Fellow or person just read the defendant's reply to have our suit dismissed as frivolous. Mm-hmm. They're claiming plaintiff John Durash is a sovereign citizen. This moniker is ridiculous. It's an oxymoron. You can't be both. You're either sovereign or a citizen. We can't let them misconstrue who we are. The final call dismissal is that we failed to provide a cause of action. Please explain what that means. If it means we have to wait till their action causes suffering or loss on behalf of the plaintiffs, we refuse to allow that to happen, and this lawsuit is standing to prevent this loss or suffering.
Mm-hmm. Well, failing to say, I'm feeding back through you, I think, Jan. Anyway, failure to state a claim or cause of action, shall I say, I think that's how they word it. I think it's by claim. They failed to state a claim. But in any event, cause of action, pretty much the same thing. And what really that's supposed to mean, that's Rule 12. There's a few ways that your case could be thrown out of court, found as being invalid, and then they cast you out. And one of the things is they claim that you're not making any sense. You're not making any points. You're not making a claim that really is understandable, I guess. I don't know how else to say that. But basically, that's what it is. The United States Supreme Court has ruled on this Rule 12, and particularly this case, a cause of action or stating a cause or a claim. And what they have said is that, basically, even if the case, it doesn't make sense and it cannot be defended, let it go through anyway because it'll be properly dealt with and disposed of. And the point is that if there really is no claim, it would be seen in the arguments. But anyway, they use Rule 12 constantly to throw everyone out. We were very clear on what our statements were, what our claims were, what standing we had, and we were very clear on all those things. But the papers that you're reading, must be old papers, because we've answered all of the papers that they have filed in this case, and then we move the case over for reconsideration by a panel of judges. And that's where we're standing right now. We're waiting for this panel of judges to look into this case and reconsider the decision. It's my impression, this case went in quite some time ago. This has been around for a long time. And once all the paperwork was in, the judge seemed to take forever to come up with some kind of a conclusion. And finally he decided his conclusion and threw it out. We rebutted everything the judge said and everything the other individuals said, filed it back into the court under a reconsideration, as I mentioned, by a panel of judges. They seem to be taking their time, too. That was done quite some while ago also. That suggests to me that they're puzzling over it. So we'll see where they go. If they come back with throwing it out and denying us on it, then we're going to take it to the appellate court, which is down in New York City. Right now, down in New York City, it takes a while to go through that process like anything else. It could take like 3-4 months before, you know, they would have to answer us down there. but there is a process. We will go through that, and we'll see where that goes at that point. We do know that Trump has appointed some new judges on the appellate division down there in New York City, so that could be a good thing. Maybe we'll get a judge that's going to be honest and apply the law. But again, it is difficult. It's an uphill battle. We're working on another case to deal with the problem against the judiciary, and I've been puzzling over how to approach that for quite some time now. I've come up with a lot of different ideas and thoughts, and maybe others can come up some ideas. But we have to file it in such a way without paying the fee to get into the courts. So we'll see if we could do that. And if we end up having to pay that fee to get into the court, we'll pay it under duress and make sure we make the point that we're not giving up any of our rights because we're paying a statutory fee to go into a civil court, which should be a common law court and not a civil court. I've been reading through USC 28, trying to see what kind of loopholes might be in there. I saw one, I don't know whether I want to call it a loophole, but they've hidden the truth inside of the statutes. And USC 28 is really covers the rules and the procedures of the courts. And so all of the courts no matter what jurisdiction is involved, they operate under these certain rules on how they go. And there are, I think there's 27 different jurisdictions, if I recall, because there are 27 different U.S. titles that have been escalated to what's called positive law, which means it's the law of the land. Or the law of the jurisdiction, shall I say. I don't want to say the law of the land, but the law of the jurisdiction, wherever that jurisdiction is. and of course the other 26 or 27 USC titles, then they would apply to regulations and codes that the people who are in power in an authority in different agencies and so on throughout our government, including the president, I think he's under USC 4, if I remember, where it discusses his powers and authorities and, you know, gives all of the necessary, information on what they can and cannot do. And, of course, if they're given power beyond their authority, then it's null and void. And, of course, that point has to be made and fought in court. But the big problem is getting into a court of law. I'm going to have a lot to say on that. I'm working on that issue right now, not only for the purpose of writing our papers and applying them into the court against the judiciary, but also for the course that we have going government by consent course. We have the Declaration of Independence is done. I need to print, you know, put that up, upload that. I think that's Chapter 7. And I'm working on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the other amendments to the Constitution, 11 through 27. And I'm working on that collectively. I'm working on it together because, you know, sort of at the same time, I'm kind of jumping back and forth, trying to work things out to see how we can explain the powers and the authorities in a logical, methodical way that people will grasp and see, oh, yeah, this is what the Senate could do. Oh, yeah, this is what the Congress can do. And this is the power of the president over here. And here is the authority of the court. And then what restrictions have been placed upon them and what changes have been taken place by the amendments 11 through 27. And also looking into the debates concerning all of these different amendments and trying to find the reasoning and lay out the reasoning why these amendments took place. And I give my thoughts on whether I think they're valid or not, whether they should be repugnant. But anyway, that's taken some time, and we're working through that right now. let me see. I forget where I started off. I lost my train of thought why I was going around this circle, but in any event, if you recall, let me know. If not, what's the next question?
Okay, that was the second question. It only had two tonight.
Okay. Read that second question one more time. I'm going to make sure I answered that.
Okay, I just read the defendant's reply to have our suit dismissed as frivolous.
Ah, okay, yes. All right. Yeah, so I think those papers are old papers. That's the point. And what we're doing here is going to, you know, try to really identify the jurisdiction. Can you mute your mic there, Jan?
Yes.
What we want to do in the lawsuit against the judiciary is really identify how they have went about and hidden and removed the courts of law. And again, you know, there are two courts of law, by the way. Not only is there the law of the land and the law of the sea, but there is the law itself. Anything that's been codified with authority to be codified, okay, that is law, okay? They're statutes, but they're law. It's called positive law, law by human beings. Then, of course, there is the true law, you know, the law that's common to all of us that we're all held under, no matter what. Nobody is above this law. And that, of course, is God's law, natural law, common law. We're trying to, you know, I find that when we talk about common law on paper, we've got to be very careful because they have an idea of what common law is, and they kind of laid this out. They've taught a lot of lawyers, for instance, a lot of lawyers believe that, common law is really working through the conclusions of the courts, okay? And not necessarily just the appellate courts. I mean, I don't take anything worth anything in any court decision any court makes. You know, you give it a little more credit when maybe it gets into the appellate process. And definitely, of course, the United States Supreme Court, you really want to give that a lot of weight. But even they, of course, could be wrong if it's in conflict with the Constitution, if it's in conflict with powers and authorities that we've given them and they're claiming they have, or a conflict against our unalienable rights, then, of course, it would be null and void. It would be no law at all. But this is the battle we have, is trying to get open a court of law. And again, that paperwork that was referred to, it sounds like something that's old. We've already responded to all that. Okay, anything else, Jan?
No, that was it. That was it, just those two questions.
All right. Okay, is Brent here tonight? I'm looking for Brent. Do you see Brent?
I didn't see him yet. I just looked a minute ago.
Okay. Well, anyway, we do have the Q&A open. Anybody wants to get into the Q&A, star six, and I think it's a one to get into the Q&A, star six and a one. Keep an eye open for Brent when he comes in. We'll pass things over. I don't have anything particular to cover tonight, but we'll look for questions and see what we may discuss. Before we move forward, Gerard, are you here? Do you want to take the controls here? All right, well, we'll wait for Gerard to get back, too. I see he's already signed into the room. So, all right, let's take our first caller. There's only two people in the queue. Anybody has any questions or comments, star six, and then a one in the queue. First caller, Kim from Louisiana.
Yes, I had a question concerning where I could locate some information about student loans.
I don't understand. You're looking to get a student loan?
No, I have an outstanding student loan.
Oh,
I need some
okay.
information to be able to answer them properly and effectively.
Yeah, well, look at with the student loans, I've never even looked much into it. I know I had taken out a loan for quite some many, many years ago. I went to school to college for a year after I had a GED, and that put me into debt, and of course they came after me, beat me up pretty bad. I finally paid it off. But I don't have any strategy or anything with them. You can probably work some kind of arrangements out with them reasonably.
There's no place you know of to go look up some information?
Not offhand, I don't know. I don't know if, Jan, do you know of anything? I'm not aware of anything.
No, nothing at all.
I don't know if Gerard's here, if he knows of anything.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, you can Google it. You know, I have found when I try to understand something, the internet is fantastic. Computers are fantastic. I mean, you know, I would never have the knowledge I have today without computers, without the internet. I mean, I would have been working through books. I was working through books before the internet came about. But it's much slower pace, and you don't get all the richness. You can't pull all those things together very quickly. And trying to find information, is difficult. And to give a silly example, I remember I was watching, what was the name of that program? I can't remember his name. He was an Italian cop, funny guy, trench coat. Always sloppy with
Columbo.
A cigar. Columbo, there you
Columbo.
Go, Columbo. And I was watching one of them, a couple of years back, I was watching one of the older ones, and he was trying to solve a case, and he was working out the case, and it was over a Friday and over a weekend. And he was trying to figure out, again, what was going on, try to solve the case. And he solved the case by something to do with weather. But he couldn't, there was no place where he can really go to get that information concerning weather. He had to place a long-distance call, and he had to get into, talk to some people who had to do some research and look into the back to see what the weather was like and what was happening, so on and so forth, and then he finally got that information. And it was kind of funny because, here he's spending 3 or 4 days trying to get that information where we can get that literally in 10 seconds, just at the press of a button. And you put any phrase, I mean, anytime you have if you can remember a part of a quote, for instance, and you don't even need to have the person's name, but if you know, for instance, Jefferson, and you put 2 or 3 words of a quote into the search bar, and you click the button, pop, it's there. You'll find it immediately. So that's huge. That really saves a lot of time, and we're able to really advance our studies and advance our information flow quite quickly through using the Internet. So my point, though, anyway, and going a long way around for this, is if you put some keywords into Google, I'm sure you'll get a lot of information. And as you read through things, maybe you'll find other keywords you can use in order to seek what it is you're trying to do. So are you trying to deal with them for payments of the loans or what? Did they take a court action after you yet?
Well, what happened was every Tom, Dick, and Harry contacted me saying, you know, just give us $5 a month and you'll be in good standing. And by the way, we're going to send you some paperwork and we only want 26% of what's left on the outstanding loan.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a good deal, you know, but you got to make sure it's real, I'm sure.
26%?
Well, 26% of the loan of the 100%?
Right.
So, I mean, isn't that a good deal if you only have to pay 26% instead of 100%?
No, they wanted, as their payment, 26%.
Oh. And what were they going to do for you?
Right. They were going to take the payments.
Yeah, I can't give you any thoughts or ideas on that. I just don't know anything about it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Okay. Nobody in the queue. Only one other person left in the queue. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. 970. You got the mic. What's your first name?
Leland.
How you doing, Leland?
I am doing fine. I did.
I just talked to you recently. I spoke with you during a week, I think, didn't I?
You sure did.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Anyways, I sent the certified documents to the sheriff. I actually got in the shuttle bus and delivered it in person, and they immediately called the lieutenant or whatever, and they said, "No, we can't handle the case."
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, that's kind of strange. Again, two things you got to do. Okay, and I'm wondering maybe this is what you've done, but you want to do an affidavit, go down and get it, just one, two, you know, write something right on paper, your situation, then go file a complaint, okay, and attach that affidavit to the complaint. Now they have to respond. They cannot ignore a complaint, a written complaint, especially with an affidavit attached. They just can't ignore it. And if they do, if you got that kind of a sheriff that does that, you know, well, then I guess maybe you could have some luck with the local police department. I don't know, but that would be my second avenue to go through. Maybe they would be more constitutional than that sheriff. I just don't see how the sheriff can ignore it.
No. If you recall, I told you that the municipal judge is working with the thief and... Mm-hmm.
Right, I remember now, yes.
And the cops are all tied in with the judge. I've called on other cases to have the local police come and search for fingerprints, and the officer just rubbed his hands all over the crime scene and said, "Oh, no, we can't do nothing with this thing." So... I'm actually if you're going up against a grizzly bear, ask him not to scratch you or bite you.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, you have a really bad situation, it seems there, and you know, I can only advise you on some of the things you could do, but apparently none of those things are going to work. You know, the only thing you could do is try to deal with them on their terms as best you can, or move, and that, of course, is a tough one, I'm sure, moving. But the other, you know, the other thing that really we all have to do is really wait until we can get into real courts, because let me tell you, getting into a court is just part one. Getting into your jurisdiction is a whole other story. And staying in that court, of course, is another problem, because they love to throw you out under Rule 12, as they always do to us, always. Everybody I know that files their own cases, or people that I hear from, At some point, they all start getting thrown out at Rule 12. Anytime you bring up anything that they don't want to answer, you know, pro se, people bring it up, and they just get rid of you by applying Rule 12. You didn't state a court of action or something of that nature, a cause of action or something of that nature. So, you know, I don't know what else to tell you on that. That's the only thing I could tell you. If they're all corrupt,
yeah,
I don't know where you can go with it.
I know that, you know, they're all jamming together against me.
Well,
let me ask you a question.
Is it not the case that some of your weapons are not there?
Yeah, it's five pistols been taken out of my vault.
Call the feds. Because maybe with a weapon being there. What did they say?
I already did, and they said, "Oh, you haven't filed a report with the local police or whatever. You need to go file it with the sheriff." And I says, "Well, they're all against me." Well, he said, "Then go to the highway patrol." So I wrote a letter to the chief commander of the district here, and he didn't give me an answer, but consequently, I told him I wanted to check the fuel lines and stuff in my car because they put chemicals in it. Anyways, I have this electric stove up against the back of my car, and there's a fence on the other side. And they moved that stove out and evidently added more chemicals because I went and checked to see if they drained the fuel line or something, and the tank and the needle still registers about a half a tank like it was. So, no, I can't get any help in this area, and the only thing I know to do is to hire an attorney and see if he can do something.
Well, that's desperate times sometimes calls for desperate measures. You could talk to an attorney and see, A, what he might be able to do for you, and B, what if he charge you, you know? So, I mean, but I don't know what else to tell you. Because sometimes they can get through. Look, when you use their people to deal with their people, you know, maybe sometimes they can settle something. It's a possibility.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It takes a communist to deal with a communist.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to send you that route, but, you know, I don't know what else to tell you. Yeah, so.
Well, it's a real stumbling block because they've lorded it over me. And like you kind of suggested that I ought to move or whatever. Well, they want to move me out of my property a long time ago, but I'm 3/4 of a century old. And I just can't pick up and move, and I've been disabled.
No, I understand that.
Well, I've been disabled 40-some years. I don't have money to just, you know, walk out on my property. And I did tell you that I worked with an attorney as a detective.
I'm sorry? Yeah, you told me that you worked, yeah, that's right, as a detective, yes.
And so... he's deceased now, so that they're laying it in on me pretty good now because I don't have no protection. He would stop a lot of that stuff. But
did he have an associate or someone that he worked with?
Kind of, and I went to him, and he just went and looked at my case, and then he come back and told me I'd have to go check with the local police and argue with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's nothing else I can think of to suggest that you might try. You know, I mean, you seem to have really done it all, and all right. Well, look at it. If you talk to an attorney and you know, keep us informed, let us know what happens.
All right, I surely will. I'll keep tuning in and let you know what happens. But right now, it's about the only choice I got is to talk with an attorney.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the call, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. Okay?
All right.
Let's take our next caller. Let's see. It's 989 area code. Give us
yes,
your first
hello.
Name. By the way, there's no one else in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, star 6 and a 1. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Carrie
Hi.
From Michigan.
How you doing, Carrie?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my inquiry. But I just wanted to respond to Kim's inquiry about the student loans. So most likely the student loan, I don't know if she's still on the line or not or whatever. But
she's probably still in the room, but go ahead.
Okay, most likely it is a third-party collector because from what she was saying, it sounds like
they sold it.
Are.
Yes. I mean, that's interesting. Let me think about that a minute. Now, if they sold it, they don't have a contract. They have nothing in the game, you know, no skin in the game. So
right.
Actually, by the true law, they can't collect.
That's true. And as well, so what she can do is actually find some, you know, like you were saying, you could just go to the internet and get information and find some letters, like some templates or something for validation. There's a lot out there. In fact, there's one on YouTube. It's called yourlaw.org, and he has a lot of good information about all court matters and such and all these third-party debt collectors. And he has a lot of really good validation letters to send to these alleged debt collectors. And there, he also has estoppels and default notices. And I'm telling you, they really work because I've done it. Mm. Some really good processes, administrative processes. So I think that's her best bet is to actually, you know, send some letters to validate it. And, of course, they never will. They never will validate because it's not a real debt anyways.
Did you mention you found this stuff online?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the website? Give us the website.
Yeah. It's called yourlaw.org.
U-R-Law. So the letter U, the letter R, and then the word law?
U as in Y-O-U.
Okay.
A-R-E.
Okay.
L-A-W.org.
.org.
And it's there's a free membership, but there's also you can pay like $37 a month to be a premium member and get all that really good information. And if you're really looking for remedies, it's really worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good website.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah, you know, I could see how that could be defeated. You know, I didn't think about that it probably, you know, I was thinking that someone as a third party was contacting her and trying to work the deal out like they try to work out deals. You hear it on the radio all the time. You know, we'll help you with your IRS problems. Call us, blah, 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 blah. And
right.
But, yeah, I remember now. That's right. It was a third party that purchased the loans. After a certain point, they just purchase all these defaulted loans, and then they purchase them very cheaply. They're all monetized. That's monetization, I guess you might say. And and then they come out, and they try to work a deal out with you, and they make their money that way. That could work out pretty good if you want to pay the loan off. But also the other side of that thing is they don't have the authority to be able to take that loan on that way to collect it.
That's
you know?
Right. And they're most likely not even licensed debt collectors. They're just fly-by-night people sometimes. But I don't know, maybe the student loans are different. They're most likely a third, you know, a different type of agency, you know, not having really, you see what I'm saying? It's not really federal
right.
agency. It's more of a commercial agency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They can't identify themselves as federal. They Well, maybe they can make a name up that makes them look federal, you know, like the Federal Reserve does, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds interesting. I'm going to check that site out myself and see once what they got going over there. So.
Yeah, he's got he has weekly webinars and calls, and he has a lot of really good common law type of things, like arbitration, subrogation. And I really am learning a lot, you know, trying to deal with my own problems. So it's I like to pass it on, you know, just to help people out or whatever. You know, I mean, there's everybody's in debt. Everybody has a debt problem. And it's not by chance that we're all there with debt problems. I mean, I don't know if you know, the money system is all based on debt.
Right. And hopefully that's going to change soon. From what I'm hearing and seeing, it looks like it's potentially going to come to a change soon. So,
well, I hope so. That would be definitely a revolution going on.
And by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, there's nobody else in the queue right now. Star 6 and a 1. But go ahead, Carrie.
Okay, I think we're all set, but thank you for taking my call or questions.
Okay, appreciate it. Right.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. All right, Gerard, are you here? And did Brent get in yet? I don't see him. Okay, Grace from Tennessee. You got the mic, Grace. Or Winthrop.
Hello, muted.
How you doing?
Winthrop from Tennessee. I'm doing fine.
Yeah,
thank you.
You don't sound like Grace, so you must be Winthrop.
Yeah, that's one.
Right?
We're logged in the Grace.
Yeah, go ahead.
That was a very good thing, that video you did, Stick to Your Guns, over there on that website. That was really good.
I don't remember which one that
was.
But go ahead.
It was seven months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You said you wanted to have a fundraiser, Education Challenge, Education 2020. We have a fundraiser, starting $55 for people to take the course, and give them a silver coin at the end of it, and sell the silver coins as a memento.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have to be careful on how we would go about approaching that, but what we did do is, we do have a course up online right now that we do ask those who want to join that course to become members and a donating member of $5 a month or more. And so, hopefully more people will take the course. They need to take the course. You know, look at, in the beginning of our program tonight, we were talking about the fact that, that we're working to save America. And that's a real serious point that we here are making here at National Liberty Alliance because, it doesn't matter what Trump does. Trump may be able to take out the deep state. He may be able to drain the swamp. He may be able to put things back to the way they should be and get us back to on a pretty good shape. But if the people don't get educated to take the power and the authority, to be consent to their government, people don't know how to consent to their government, and that's what this course teaches: how to have government by consent. It also teaches us or the people, what the Constitution. We learn about the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. We might cover the Magna Carta. I don't think. Well, we'll make reference to it for sure, but I don't think we're going to cover the Magna Carta. and also the amendments, the 11th through 27th amendments. And also court access, how to get into a court, how to write the forms, what papers are required, a structure of filing papers in the court that everyone should know. And of course, we're working to try to reopen natural law courts, and that's why we're going to sue the judiciary and go through that process. But anyway, going back to this course that we have courses that are free, but this one course, which but we've got up open right now, up to Chapter 6, and there'll probably be about 14 chapters to this. We ask that people you know, be donating members. So at $5 a month for a year, we ask them to commit to 2 years, okay? So that's $60 a year. It's not a lot of money. And $120 for 2 years, well worth what this course is, far, far valued more than that. And it pretty much is going to cover most of what I'll have in a book, writing a book at the same time. And hopefully we'll be able to sell that cheaply, maybe $19.95 or $29.95. I have no idea what books might go for. It's going to be a pretty thick, meaty book, but it'll have a lot of information, and it definitely will be a reference book. You'll be able to use it as a reference, you know, going into a court, filing papers, or whatever the case may be, and how to write a form, you know, the different forms that you might use in a courtroom setting. But, you know, but without that knowledge, we don't have a chance of saving America. If we cannot get, we've calculated we need about, okay, let's just run some numbers here. We need about 15,000 people to take control of the federal judiciary, or actually of the local judiciary, which would be the county court, the state court in your county. And through that process, we would also take control of the federal courts as far as bringing in and orientating the juries, the grand jury and the trial jury, making sure they understand the powers and the authorities that, that they have, that they can do jury nullification, and make sure they get fed with the right information that they need in order to go in and do the job that they're going to do as good jurists. And so we need about 15,000 people across the nation to volunteer for that. Right now we have a little over 1,000, so we need another 14,000. This is a paid position that we're structuring, and it'll be a position that's paid. Right now, the funding for orientating juries is given to the courts, and the judges will deal with some part of that, and of course the prosecutors deal with the grand jury particularly. And so everything's controlled by the government. We got to take it out of the government's hand. Okay, that's number one. The other thing is taking back the political process. That requires a bare minimum of 4 or 5 people in every county. So if we have 3,000 counties, well, it's another 12 to 15,000 people. So to take this nation back and to truly have government by consent, by people need to be educated to do this, okay, and that's what the education that we're giving is all about. But by coming and stepping up and taking our government back, consent of government, by consenting to the judiciary, the judicial process, consenting to or not to the political process, taking control of that, then the people can now have a government by consent. And, of course, you know, we're training and teaching people through this process on how you need to take things into your into the people of the county, your county, okay, ultimately, relationship with the sheriff. You know, once you have authority in a court setting or you have authority in a political setting, you know, through the committeeman process as a chairman or through the administrative process of the juries, okay, in the courts, anything you have to say to the sheriff, he's going to take very serious and he's going to believe because you have position and you have you know, you have an authority. And so you have a relationship with your sheriff. Maybe you get him a copy of the book because there's a section there for sheriffs also, but everything that's in that book, every American should know, whether you're a law enforcement or just one of the people. We should all know these things. The other thing, of course, is working with the committeemen, bringing these two power groups together. To work with committeemen, to get an educational process going out into the people within your communities about, you know, the Constitution and how to consent to government, how to get involved, how to become a committeeman, talk about jurists and responding to the jury call and explaining to them what's involved with it. And also, you know, look, a jurist should be compensated a heck of a lot more than they are. They compensate all these attorneys and everything, and maybe they need a little less compensating there, or maybe a whole lot of less compensating there, and more compensating to the people whose authority and power it is to go in there and make the decision. It isn't up to the judge to make a decision when a criminal action is taken up against an individual. It's up to the people to make that decision. And that's what we need to do. We need to take this power and authority. So in order to take this nation back, well, actually, Trump and the military, the military and other people, other agencies working with him will eventually take things back to where it belongs. But then we're going to have this power vacuum. And if the people don't fill that power vacuum, someone or something has to fill that power vacuum. We're only going to end up back to where we started from. This will be a repeating process over and over and over. It'll be endless until the people decide that they're going to do something. So the people need to do something. It starts with an education and an understanding of the processes and then seeing how you might fit into it. And fitting into it may be just getting behind the movement and supporting us maybe financially, supporting us in numbers when it's time to step up and stand somewhere, supporting the local people, the people that are locally taking in the power and the authority structures over, being educated, making sure our children are educated, and participating to get other people involved in your community to get educated, and to take back this nation, and respond when you're called to for jury duty. You know, people need to understand what that is and how much time is taken away to do that, and also what compensation they might get when they get called to jury duty. But all of these things the people need to do, they need to understand. They need to understand jury nullification. We need an educated sheriff, okay? So if the people don't do this, it's all for nothing. Everything Trump is doing for nothing.
This is the thing. This is a one-time deal, okay? It's a one-time deal. You only do this one time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be perpetual.
That's right.
We got 15 million. We got 15 million people that are involved with the Tea Party. Okay. If you can get just 100,000 of those, 100,000 of those people,
30,000 to take the thing and work. So that 30,000 will get more people involved also. But 30,000 is what we need across this nation. We need about 9 or 10 people. Well, of course, that's where we want to get to. What I'm trying to say is that if we had 9 people in every county, 9 people in every county who would take this serious and step up, get the education, and take these power structures back, take the authority. And like I said, on the jurist side of things, there's a paycheck there for the administrators, for the juries. On the political side of things, it's just a little time volunteered, but it's not a paid position. But we need to take care of it. We need to take back control. We need to be the consensors to our government.
You said there'll become a time in National Liberty Alliance when the organization itself will just be as you are, the facilitator of information. Of the function of National Liberty Alliance. And the people are the ones that really control the grand jury. And this is what I'm presenting here is taking us to that point. Because if we can get 100,000 people out of the Tea Party paying $55 for this course, I mean, that's $5.2 million, John.
Well, that's you're absolutely right. But
course.
Again,
people are so blue-pilled, John. People are so blue-pilled that they have to have some detriment. There has to be some skin in the game.
And absolutely.
Giving something free, there's no detriment. They're not going to take it unless they're die-hard people, like the people that you have with us, the followers. We're die-hard committed people because we get it. But the people are just so blue-pilled, they're not going to get it. So we're going to have to sell them. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars they're in debt right now to education that they're freaking unemployed. They're not working. They're on food stamps. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, absolutely.
They've got to spend something. They've got to get some skin in the game. And they've
already trying to get the attention of the people. Trying to get the attention of the people.
With a fundraiser approach, John, we could put together a campaign and a strategy with a fundraising team and present this to the nation, United States, Educate 2020. You know, there's a scheme
we
can run with right now.
Why don't you Why don't you get a hold of Jen? Why don't you get a hold of Jen?
Okay. I talked about it on Thursday night, but I just wanted to bring it out to other people that could be listening. You know, they can contact me at wbs1630@gmail.com if they're interested in, you know, helping put together that fundraiser type thing to market National Liberty Alliance Government by Consent.
All right, well, look, let's start out this way. You know, it always works better to try to build a committee. So get a hold of Jan. Okay, you could find his number, you know, up on our website, the National Liberty Alliance, and go into the directory. Okay, yeah, you know. And get a hold of him, and let's see if we can't find a few volunteers to work together with you, get together and brainstorm the ideas and see what kind of a plan we could put together. You bring it to the national leadership. And if they think it's good, and then we'll take a look at it. We'll probably go forward with it. We'll just want to make sure we tweak it and make sure nothing is in such a way that we might get ourselves in trouble, you know. But other than that, we need to find a way. You know, one of the things we'd like to do, and again, we need a committee put together. We've been talking about this for months, and we just don't have anyone taking the lead on this. We need a small committee. It could be just one person, but two or three people is probably more desirable, and get a list of places where we can go and speak, get on radios, get on the TV programs, YouTube programs. There's a lot of alternative news on YouTube, and a lot of these people, they have large listenerships. You know, 55,000 here, 100,000 there, 20,000 there. If we can get onto their programs and get interviewed, we can then offer the what we have to offer here at National Liberty Alliance, which keys in and works with exactly what they're doing, you know?
Well, I'll make a suggestion, John.
Yeah.
Can you, that video that you just made 7 months ago that you got on YouTube about your guns. Why don't you email that video out as a link to the membership?
Well, I'm surprised. Well, we probably have it on our website. I'm trying to think of which video it is. Can you identify it? Or?
It's the last one you did 7 months ago with Amber, Amy, something like that. The radio station, radio call show. Anyhow,
I'm interested in finding that, and talk to Jan and work with him. Maybe we can find
it. Is that the TV, free TV one?
Yeah, the one on free TV, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it was, I did just her, and I actually did the video part for her also, right? That's probably the one you
just link that and send it to the membership. Send that out to the membership, and that will allow the membership to share it.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, again, you know, we need committees.
If you
want
to get the word out, you gotta get the word out. That's an awesome video that you made. It was a really good presentation. It was easy to follow, and
it's very difficult to get to step up and volunteer your time. It's very, very difficult, and I'm surprised.
I understand that.
Huh?
I understand.
Yeah. So look at. Let's comes out with Dan. Let's get a committee together. See what you could do to work this out, and we'll take it from there. You know, I mean, definitely anything we could do to get it out, get it to the. We have some special videos are really educational videos that tell people who and what we are and what we're doing, and maybe we can make some new ones. I mean, it doesn't take much to make these things, much time anyway. It's for free to make them. So, put together something special, and if we can get those get them onto a USB thumb drive, okay? We'll put them onto thumb drives or put a place where people can download them, and then people in their meetings, you know, with a lot of these liberty groups can show a video which will introduce them to National Liberty Alliance and explain what it is we do, and so on and so forth. We've done a lot of them, different ones on different cases, how to take control of the political process, how to take control of the judicial process. So we've done quite a few different videos. So Right. We can make more if we have to, or we can use some of the ones we have. But then we got to get it out there to the people, who will then take it to
Exactly. We got to sell it. We have to sell it to the people.
Right.
We can't give it to them. We got to sell it to them.
That takes time, and so we need a committee to work on that.
Right on. I'll talk to Jan.
Yeah, see what you can work out.
Thank you for your national leadership that you do.
Appreciate that. And we'll try to help you get people who might work on that committee, and we'll put some emails out to our membership to see who might be interested in working on that. And, let's get the job done.
Yeah.
This is all about education and informing the people in the grassroots level in order to step up and take control on the grassroots level.
Right. Well, we're gonna sell them an Educate 2020. We're going to sell them a program.
Well, if we got someone to put that together and help sell it, that'd be great. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
$55 is good, right? $55 is good, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, look, at $5 is good. But, of course, $55 is
good. $55 up front. He's going to pay $55 up front to take this course. That's what I'm telling.
Yeah,
When they get done, John, we're going to give them a silver coin.
Well, it's an easier sale to tell them that only $5 a month and a commit for a year or two. That's a much easier sale.
Right.
We've been asking for a two-year commitment. We'll ask for a one-year commitment.
I understand that. If people want to do that, that's an option.
Or they can pay the $60 right up front. Either or.
All right, I'll put an asterisk after the $55, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll explain the asterisk, okay? Is that all right? Can I do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Work things out, get people, discuss it. Let's get together a plan and then see if we can execute it.
Right on.
Okay.
Thank you, John. And let's pray for Grace. She's in the hospital. Grace is not doing well.
All right, we'll keep her in our prayers. What kind of problem?
Thank you.
Right now,
I'm not sure.
All right, we'll keep her in our prayers. Everybody should keep her in their prayers and thoughts. So. Okay, thank you, Winthrop. We'll take our next person.
Brent's here now.
Okay, all right. Well, let's hold off on the next person. Jim in New York. That's Jim up in upstate, right? Jim Beerson?
Right.
At least 518, it looks like it. All right, hold off. Gerard, you want to take control?
Yeah.
I know.
Okay, let's move over to Brent. Brent's in right now. So, Brent, are you ready?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we're going to pass the mic over to Brent, who's going to teach us something. And Brent is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the panel?
Yes.
Gerard? Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I'll be here in and out, but I'll be here. But I'm my hands are off the panel. I'm leaving it to you. Jim's mic is open. He's just have to remain quiet until Brent finishes. But go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Glad to have Gerard back with us a little bit. And I, again, appreciate the kindness of those that allow me to come on and say a few words. My comments are my own. In light of the legislation in New York concerning abortion, to be more precise, the murder of children in this case, the murder of children, the wholesale murder of children. John and I were talking here a week or so ago, and I mentioned to him, I said, I ought to tell of my experience with Justice Blackmun. Justice Blackmun is the author of Roe v. Wade. He's the justice that was assigned the task of writing that opinion over 160 pages. Doesn't cite any court cases, doesn't cite any precedent. Manufactures out of whole cloth all of it. But what I'd like to relate to you is my experience with him and the rest of the story. I don't know that this tells all the story of why some court justices and judges are bent upon murdering children. But I think this helps explain it a little bit. Maybe it does to me. And this occurred to many, a handful of decades ago, I suppose. It was after Roe v. Wade. That was in 1973. But when I was at law school, and the old building had been abandoned, the old law school building, a new building had been built, and Justice Blackmun came to speak at the dedication of the new law building. And after he had done that, he had requested, before he got there, a meeting with the students of the law school that wanted to come, and no professors were to be allowed in the meeting. It would be in a closed room in an adjacent building, an auditorium kind of a place. It wasn't very big, and there's a stage up there, though. And he wanted just students that wanted to come, and he would entertain questions for students. And the reason he didn't want the professors to come, or anybody else, nobody else was invited. The reason, I think, although I don't know, was so that the students wouldn't feel sheepish about asking questions in front of their professors. Well, we got there. We were standing outside. Let me start at the beginning. We were standing outside and waiting to go in. And I noticed that there was an old man there, he was old to me at the time. He probably was much older than I am now, but he was old to me at the time, and white-haired, handsome, dignified-looking gentleman. And he was waxing eloquent. There were a group of young men around him, students, listening to every word he said. And I thought, who in the Sam Hill is that? And my friend and I, Dave Mullen, he had just gotten out of the Marine Corps. We were standing, kind of listening from a distance, and I heard this old fellow say, "Now, boys," he said, "if you ever want to ask a Supreme Court justice a question, this is your chance, and you'd better do it." Because he said, "If you ever see a Supreme Court justice again, he'll be asking you the question, so don't miss your opportunity." Well, of course, this old man didn't go in, and I found out later it was Senator Eagleton. Senator Eagleton, who had run for vice president with, who was that fellow? McCuskey? No, not McCuskey. Well, he ran back in 72, I believe it was. He was a professor. I can't remember his name. That's how quickly politicians are forgotten. Well, this fellow was a Democrat. His name was Eagleton. He was senator in the United States Senate, and he later then went to an insane asylum. I'm not laughing at him for going to an insane asylum. It just tickles me, the madness of what happens in all of our lives. And his, he ended up going to an insane asylum. Of course, fortunately, he got out, and he was there, and he was going to then, after the justice got done entertaining questions from students, he was going to be on a panel, I found out later, and this happened. And the things he said about the United States Constitution, I've never forgotten. I've never heard such ugly, demeaning things said. Now, this is what, these were Democrats, and he was a Democrat, and a nice fella, like all politicians. I was sitting in the balcony above the House of Representatives plate one night about midnight. The Clinton crime bill was being debated, and there wasn't many people there. I happened to be there watching, and another man was up there with me, just a couple of us up there, and he leaned over and said to me, "You see all those fellows down there in the United States House of Representatives?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, every one of those fellows is a nice guy." I said, "Well, I know better than that. There's some of the people down there aren't nice at all." He said, No. He said, "They're nice." He said, "There's no other way to get into office but be nice. Don't tell me they're not nice guys. They may be dangerous and destructive as congressmen, but the truth is they're always nice to people, or they wouldn't be in office." Well, that's the way this Eagleton was. Well, Dave ended up being a state legislator in Missouri. I don't know what he's doing now. I need to look him up, but we went in and we listened to the questions, and the students would stand up and they'd ask the question, and he would slowly walk to the front of the stage and kind of lean over. It was an old building, kind of a ratty building if I remember right, but he'd lean over and he'd listen, then he'd kind of shuffle back to the microphone, which was on the stage, and then he'd answer the question. People were asking questions about cases that were then before the Supreme Court. And Dave Moen wanted to ask a question. I had to have a drink. I'm back at it now. So Dave had his question prepared, and he stood up and he said, thank you, Mr. Justice, for coming. I'd like to ask us just a simple question. He said, if Roe v. Wade were decided today, do you think it would come out the same? And he leaned over like he was trying to listen. And then he shuffled back to the microphone, and he began to respond to the question. And the more he talked about the case and kind of rambled around. And the more he talked, the more agitated it seemed, the more animated he became. And finally, he just almost blurted out, we've got to do something in this country to make women equal with men. That's what he said. Well, that kind of jarred me when he said that. I said, what's that got to do with the case? Well, the truth is it had everything to do with the case, and it still does. And it has everything to do with what just happened in New York. But that's not all. I learned more. He said that, and Dave was kind of embarrassed. It was a scathing thing to say from such a high-placed man in a high-placed position to a young fellow that was asking a sincere question, just a law student, a patriotic American and all. And so after the meeting, he answered a few more questions, and then they had the panel discussion with Senator Eagleton. I remember Eagleton said in response to one question, I don't know what it was, but he said, oh, we've got the idea the Constitution of the United States is something special. He said, it isn't. He said, lest we forget, it was just another document hammered out in a sweaty room in Philadelphia. Well, he got that right. It was a document hammered out in a sweaty room under miserable circumstances on hot days, the dog days of summer, in the city of Philadelphia. That's true. But it is those kind of things that can be endued with greatness. The things that happen that seem obscure, later we understand that, wait a minute, God may have really done something here. God may have orchestrated something. Something happened that worked out pretty good. Well, that Senator Eagleton didn't believe that. He didn't believe the Constitution was worth giving any credit to, or credence, I should say. But it has proven over time it's not the Bible. It's not inspired. But the affairs of men are orchestrated under the hand of a sovereign God, the supreme judge of all the world. That's what our Declaration of 76 says, and it is to him we appeal for the rectitude of our intentions. I hope it's to him that you appeal, I do, for the rectitude of my intentions, to quote that document. But after the meeting, after all that was over, Dave Moen wanted to go and shake hands with the justice and thank him. This was his chance. And I went with him. Dave and I were kind of hanging out together at that time, and we kind of stood in line. There were a few other folk that wanted to say nice things to him. And came Dave's turn, and he stepped forward and held his hand out. And just as he held his hand out and started to grasp the justice's hand, without warning, all of a sudden, a little old lady had inserted herself between Dave and the justice. And she got in his face with her finger. And she said, as only a little old lady could say, we were down in Little Rock just 2 weeks ago, and another man asked the same question, and he hadn't even read the case. I remember the way she said it. He hadn't even read the case, she said. And, of course, they backed up. We held our peace, and then she just kind of slipped on by, and he shook the justice's hand and asked him, or thanked him for coming, which was the proper protocol, the thing to do. And found out later that that little old lady was his wife. That was Justice Blackmun's wife. Now, I say little old lady. Now, again, she might have been about the age I am now. I don't know, but she looked that way to me at the time because I was a lot younger. And that was his wife. Well, Dave told me later, and I hadn't read the book, but he said he'd read the book by one of the fellows that clerked for Blackmun when he wrote that case. And he said, this was revealing to me because, you know, you read books and you don't know if what the fellow that's writing the book is saying is true. But I think it's true now, he said, because what this fellow said in the book after these experiences with the Justice Black, what I... I hope I'm back.
Did we lose? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, we lost you for about 20 seconds, 15 seconds.
All right, we're all right. Dave Bowen, he said, well, I read the book, and he said in this book, this clerk said that Justice Blackmun was controlled utterly by the points of view of his wife. If his wife wanted the case to go a certain way, that's the way the case went. Now, that's what the book said, and that's what Dave said, and he said after this experience of his wife dressing me down right in front of him like that, in front of everybody, rudely, without cause, he said, I'm of opinion to believe it. And he said that she was concerned, his wife, this is the story he got out of the book, that her daughters have the same opportunities as all other men in the country. Now, that's how stupid and silly and low and ugly and base and destructive the attitudes are that drive evil. It always is. Well, it's just a matter of madness. Even if that were a valid concern on her part, it doesn't justify the murder of children. That's the problem, you see. When people get off like that, you get off fundamentally from your position, your authority, your role, your duty as a human being, whether you be a man or a woman, and you don't know your own power and your own scope of authority, and you try to encroach upon that of others, it will result in bloody murder, warfare, viciousness, despair. That's what lawlessness does. What is lawlessness ultimately? It is not knowing your duty before God. That's lawlessness. Jesus Christ said to those that had said, well, we did these wonderful things in your name. We performed miracles and wondrous works. And Jesus Christ said he would say to them, depart from me, ye workers of lawlessness. That's what the Greek text says by the letters, lawlessness. Lawlessness is what destroys us. And the Constitution of the United States is a tolerable expression of our common law of government. Excuse me while I take a drink. Oh, I'm dry as a bone for some reason. It feels better. Well, that's worth considering. And I think it's worth considering to say that as a simple matter, if our law defines death, my brother said to me one time, he said, you know, Brent, statistics show, this is when we were children, statistics show that one half of all married people in the United States are women. And the other half are men. And we laughed. And then he said, you know, it also statistics show that the cause of all death in the United States is heart failure, which is true, of course. In the end, your heart stops. That's the problem. And if we define death, which we do, as the heart ultimately stops, there are no brain waves. There's another test. But in either case, if we define death that way, why don't we define life at least? Define it as the time the heart is beating. Now, I've had people say to me, well, that's not enough. Life starts at conception. Well, I understand that, but we're not even there yet. We're to the point now where we're saying there is no life until you're outside of the womb for more than 10 minutes, and we can murder anybody we want before that time. That's really the policy. That's really what happens in abortion clinics. Or who are we kidding? We've all read the stories and read the testimonies of people that have been there. We are having a terrible problem. It's not anything complicated. This is all simple, very simple. Like most things in law, it's not a matter of some fine point of law. It's just a matter of life and death, that's all. Either you're a killer, a murderer, or you aren't in this case. And ultimately, murder is the ultimate crime, and the jurisdiction that God has given to men to deal with it is... It can be pretty rough if the process is followed. Well, I've spent a little bit of time telling that story, and I've got a little bit of time left. And with what time I've got left, I do want to move move forward on the Constitution of the United States. We're going through that clause by clause and blow by blow, and we're up to Section 8, Clause 9 of Article 1, the powers of the Congress of the United States. That's Section 8 of Article 1. It says here that the Congress of the United States has the power, the authority, you see, the scope of jurisdiction, really, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. Never forget, the Constitution of the United States establishes only one court. Only one court is a creature of our Constitution. Only one court is a direct creation of our Constitution, and that is the Supreme Court of the United States. That's the only court our Constitution creates. Therefore, the Supreme Court of the United States answers to no one. The Supreme Court of the United States answers to the Constitution. It answers to the law. But it does not answer to the President. It does not answer to Congress. But never forget, too, and I hasten to add this, and don't forget this, the Congress of the United States does not answer to the Supreme Court of the United States, and neither does the President of the United States. That's right. And by the same token, the President of the United States does not answer to the Congress of the United States and does not answer to the Supreme Court of the United States. Those three branches of government are co-equal. No, the Supreme Court is not the final court or the final say on anything. It is the final court, but it does not have the final say. If the President of the United States does not want to execute the opinions of the Supreme Court, he doesn't. And there has not been a president we've had who has consistently executed every opinion that the Supreme Court hands down. Not at all. Usually you don't hear about it because they do that with cases as political favors in cases that won't hurt them politically. I remember when Clinton was president, he utterly refused to post in workplaces those signs that the Supreme Court of the United States said that he had to enforce that law, that idea that he had to enforce in workplaces, the putting up of a poster that says you don't have to pay all your money in union dues if you can find another alternative charity to give your money to that is approved or whatever. But he wouldn't post those signs. That's just one example. There are a lot of others, bunches of them. The Supreme Court of the United States, and this brings us to Marbury versus Madison, famous case, popular talk about. That's the case where Justice Marshall, way back there, near a couple hundred years ago, said that the Supreme Court of the United States has the duty to review legislation when it comes before them, the duty to review legislation for its constitutionality. And people say, well, that gives the Supreme Court too much power. No, it doesn't. He just said we have the duty to pass our opinion on the subject. That's our duty. That's what courts do. Now, whether or not the president wants to follow it's another matter. Or maybe the Congress doesn't agree and they want to pass legislation to try to overcome it. Well, they try that if they want. There are other ways to skin cats. But the Supreme Court of the United States has the duty. And it's not a matter of, well, we're just not going to say no. They must say yes or no. If somebody brings legislation before them, if a case comes up before them, and saying that a statute or a regulation is unconstitutional, the Supreme Court has a duty to say one way or the other. Well, this clause, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court, says that although the Constitution of the United States has only established one court, Congress has the power to establish other courts. That's what this is saying. And Congress has done so. Congress doesn't have to do that. Congress doesn't have to establish any courts. Congress could wipe out every federal court in the United States, all the appellate courts, all the federal trial courts, with the stroke of a pen, if Congress decided to do that. Congress could wipe out half of them. Congress could wipe out all the appellate courts and just leave the trial courts, or wipe out all the trial courts and just leave the appellate courts. I don't know what good that would do, but they could do that if they wanted to. Congress can do whatever they want because he who has the power to create has the power to destroy, and he who has the power to give, says our law, has the power to take. Congress has that power respecting every court, and it is kind of sad that Congress doesn't exercise that power. If you don't exercise it, people just forget you have it, and the country starts going the other way, thinking that these courts are somebody special that are autonomous. They aren't. Now, the Supreme Court of the United States, Congress has no power to take that away. Congress didn't create the Supreme Court of the United States. Congress, the Supreme Court of the United States, is a creature, a creation of the Constitution of the United States. Think of it this way. Our common law is the ground. It is the earth. It is the land. It is the law of the land, appropriately. And think of a giant oak tree growing out and rooted deep in the law of the land itself. Well, the law of the land is our common law. This oak tree, think of it as our Constitution. And this giant oak tree has three main branches coming out of it directly. One of them is the executive branch, one is the judicial branch, and one is the legislative branch, the Congress, the President, and the Supreme Court. And those three branches coming out of the trunk of that tree, rooted and grounded in the law of the land, our common law, those three branches do not depend on each other at all. As a matter of fact, like all branches of trees, they compete with each other for the sunlight. And these three branches don't owe each other anything. They do what they do on their own as they are receiving nourishment and authority, duty from our Constitution of the United States. That's what they're bound to. Well, that's what happens. But then the Congress, that branch out there that's the Congress, it has authority, according to our Constitution, grants Congress the authority to create these trial courts and these appellate courts. And they create other courts, too, by the way. Admiralty courts, for example. This clause empowers Congress to fashion and empower all federal courts, save the Supreme Court of the United States, and fashion them to its liking. Tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court include the United States District Trial Courts and Courts of Appeal. By this clause, all federal courts except the Supreme Court are mere creatures of Congress. I'm repeating myself, I know, but it bears repeating. Thus, Congress has rightful power over each and every federal court inferior to the Supreme Court. To limit their jurisdiction, to end it, or to abolish it altogether. In the year 1802, Congress did just that. And abolished, listen to this, abolished 18 of 35 federal courts with their judges. Just wiped them out. Got rid of them. Now remember, federal courts can hear only cases, and I'm quoting the Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1. Federal courts have jurisdiction to hear only cases arising under this Constitution. That's what our Constitution says. You see, Congress has the power to create courts, federal courts, but even if it creates them, there is a limit to what Congress can allow them to hear, according to this Constitution. There has to be a case that arises under the Constitution of the United States. Further, federal courts below the Supreme Court can hear such cases only if Congress allows. By contrast, state courts, and I want you to draw a distinction here, a state court can hear any case arising under the Constitution, plus all other cases without limit. So it is said in the United States, all state courts, practically speaking, are courts of unlimited jurisdiction. All federal courts are courts of very limited jurisdiction. This is a matter of law. The state governments have a full control over all cases, says Justice Joseph Story, civil and criminal, which concern the property, personal rights, and pursuits of their own citizens. It's a plenary power within the state boundaries. Congress, however, has no authority over the Supreme Court because it, as also Congress and the President, is a creature, a direct creation, that's what creature means, direct creation of our Constitution. You see, Congress is a direct creation of our Constitution, but all the federal courts below the Supreme Court are indirect creations of our Constitution in that they are created by a creature of our Constitution called Congress. So they're of not the same dignity of Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidency. Because each of these three branches of government stems from the same constitutional trunk, independent each of the other, we call them co-equal. To sum up, our Constitution confines federal courts' jurisdiction, as it also does all the federal government, to those matters it lists. Moreover, as co-equal branches, each branch's duty of independent judgment is non-delegable. Each person, that means this, each person of each branch is 100% responsible to decide what is constitutional and what is not, and to act accordingly. For example, our common law and Constitution both forbid the President or any member of Congress from allowing the Supreme Court to interpret our Constitution for him. I'm going to quote here Andy Jackson, President Andy Jackson. Here's what he said. He said, each public officer who takes an oath to support the Constitution swears that he will support it as he understands it, and not as it is understood by others. Listen, and that goes for all of us, not just federal office holders. You see, federal office holders and state office holders, they take an oath, but the oath does not give them any additional duties to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic. That does not invoke upon them any additional duties they didn't already have. You have those duties. What the oath does is it doesn't bind them to any new duties. It just additionally binds them to the duty they already have. It makes their duty binding more and puts them under greater threat of prosecution if they don't do their duty. Now, you say it doesn't work out that way practically. Unfortunately, it doesn't. The oath is taken lightly, jokingly, not thought much of, I don't suppose. People act like they don't care. I don't think they have a clue what they're doing when they take the oath either. You know, why do we take oaths? Well, we take an oath because fundamentally men are promise breakers. That means they're liars, fundamentally. They don't always keep their word, so we require the oath, hoping that it will awaken the conscience to the fact that God himself will bring down hell on their heads if they don't do what they promised to do, because that's what the oath is. It is asking God to witness my promise to men and to visit me with vengeance if I don't keep my promise. We need to say that to people and try to hold them to it as much as we can. Well, that means that each of us has a duty to decide what is right and what is wrong for ourselves. And none of us, when we stand before God, will be allowed to say, well, the President said it was okay, or the Supreme Court said it was okay, or my governor said it was okay, or the law, the Congress said it was okay, so I did it. That's not going to wash. It's not going to help. That's no justification. No, you must decide yourself. That's why John is trying to write these booklets he's writing about the law. He's trying to research, understand. And I should say John, there are probably other people helping him, I don't know, but he's trying to decide what he thinks it is. He's trying to work through it. And it's up to you to listen to others. I listen to others and decide for ourselves. Read for ourselves what is right and what is wrong, and to live by it. Once we know for sure, well, you got to be careful. You got to know for sure. As Davy Crockett used to say, be sure you're right, then go ahead. Don't turn that around. Go ahead, then try to figure out if you're right. No, be sure you're right. And that's quite a task. As a matter of fact, it's the greatest responsibility that God has given to us, that we can discern, that we must discern what is right and what is wrong in any given situation. Back to you, John, and thanks again.
Okay.
Or Gerard. Yeah, there you are.
Thank you. Thank you, Brent. That was very nice. There's nobody in the queue.
I think we lost everybody in the queue. There was people in the queue before, but star six to get into the queue. I know Jim was in there.
Let me share
a little something, huh?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, let me share a little something while we're waiting for people to get into the queue. You know, we're working on a paper right now to serve on to the governor up here in New York State, and also the legislators concerning this new abortion law that allows them to commit an abortion all the way up to birth. And so if they do an abortion on an individual, and the person is ready to go into labor, but they abort the child, they could leave the child there to die. And I believe that's what they do. They just leave the child in a place to die. And of course, that's murder. No matter what you do, I mean, we can try to define when life begins. We could try to define and show a lot of things. But the fact of the matter is, I think everybody's got to agree that you just can't take a newborn baby and leave it there to die. And anybody who participates with that, in my opinion, is guilty of murder. But we're going to write a paper and send it up. It'll be done in an information. We'll probably copy the president and various other individuals in Congress. Basically, you know, in my research of trying to put something together, I was looking at the preamble. And I read in the preamble, well, let me just read the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Okay, now that's the preamble to the Constitution. But take note of the words. I mean, first of all, these are the things required by all government officials, no matter what they do, no matter what action they take, whether the legislator is writing law or if they're an administrator, a president, a governor, exercising their authority, you know, through different agencies and so on. Everything they do must be with in mind keeping these things. It has a purpose to establish justice, to ensure tranquility, maybe to provide for the defense, you know, like Trump is trying to do with a wall, and so on. All of these things must be, you know, really kept in mind, and that should be anything outside of doing those things they can't do, really. And so when you look at this, it says to secure our blessings of liberty. Now, we refer to the blessings of liberty, which takes us right over back to the Declaration of Independence and ties us right into the agreement that we made with God when we called upon him in the Declarations of Independence to be placed under his law. We made a covenant with God right there. And so no man can break that. And we've extended that out to our posterity. Anyway, I was looking up this word posterity, and I thought I might find something in it. And posterity, let me see if scroll through my notes here because I got a lot of notes. Let me see if I can do a quick word search on this in this page. So find. Okay. Let me read this, what I've gotten written so far. Well, maybe not. Hang on a minute. Posterity. Okay, here it is. I went up to look up the definition of posterity, and of course I found this in Black's Fourth, and you know, everything they do, they usually tie it into a court case that has established a meaning or shows that how they use the particular word or phrase so we can all be on the same page. And generally speaking, it's, I find things to be pretty accurate, you know, and it really defines the words. But here the word posterity. The word posterity includes all the descendants of a person in a direct line to the remotest generation, remotest generation, born or unborn, whereas descendants are persons who proceed from the body of another, in other words, born. So they can make their argument however they want to make it, but nevertheless, right here, the fact that we have declared this for ourselves and our posterity. We ordained and established this in the Constitution. So our posterity has the very same rights that we have. Why? Because they have the blessings of liberty, and government's job is to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And again, our posterity runs across a linear line, people born or unborn, okay? So right there in the Constitution makes it clear that what they're doing is in violation to the Constitution, not to mention that it's immoral, not to mention that it's nothing that God is going to bless us for. If anything, he's going to curse us. You know, we read, for instance, in Psalms chapter 127, verses 3 through 5, we read, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord and the fruit of the womb." And that's very interesting, the fruit of the womb, because if you look into the meaning of that word, looking into Latin, which you find in Black's Law, it identifies the fetus, And so they understand, even through the meaning of words that we use, that the fetus identifies with the fruit of the womb. And there's a lot of verses talks about the fruit of the womb. Anyway, children are an heritage of the Lord and the fruit of the womb in his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. So God talks about children being a heritage. He talks about them being fruit in the womb. And in many places, he also refers to an infant in the womb, where men try to define an infant as someone at the point of birth to a certain time period. As a matter of fact, if you look into black law, is someone snoring out there? Who's snoring out there? Anyway, you look into Black's Law. An infant is identified, I can't believe this, this was a Supreme Court ruling, identifies an infant with an individual from birth to 21. Now, if you listen to people speak, they talk about an infant from, you know, birth to a certain age. I don't know, maybe 2, maybe 6, whatever age they want. Somebody seems to make this up, whatever age they want it to be. But God includes the baby in the womb. He calls them children in the womb, and he also refers to them as infants in the womb. He also talks about having a relationship with them in the womb. After all, John the Baptist leaped for joy when the gospel was spoken to his mother Elizabeth, when Mary met up with her. They were cousins. And the babe, John the Baptist, was 6 months in the womb, yet another 3 months to be born yet. And he leaped for joy, the Bible tells us. So God has a communication even with his children in the womb. It may not be in a way that we understand it in this world. However this is, this is one of the mysteries of God, his relationship with his people, with his children. He also refers to people in the loins of others. For instance, when the Jews went down to Egypt, God spoke of four individuals going down into Egypt, as if they were four people actually taking the journey to go down into Egypt. And then when we study these individuals, we find out that three of these individuals weren't even born. And through the process of time, you know, one was a progenitor of another, and the last one came out on the other side. So four individuals God identified as people that he has a relationship with, identifies them as living souls going down into Egypt and then coming out on the other side in Exodus. So the fourth one came out through Exodus. So this is the way God looks at children in the womb. And, of course, it's his creation. He talks about it being the fruit of the womb. He referred to Jesus Christ when he was in the womb of Mary. He refers to them at time periods of conception, being children, being infants. So, of course, they take this whole thing and they just ignore the godly side of it. And they try to make a claim that life begins after a child is born, which is the most dangerous of all, of course. But even those who try to define, I know the legal term that has not been changed or the idea that has been, you find this in the Black's Law Dictionary and some U.S. cases, that the legal term or when a child, when they believe that a child now is alive or considered a person or whatever it is that they say, I don't know. But they claim that it is at the point in time when the child first arouses, when the first kick comes or the hand touches something in the womb and the mother feels it, or someone else can feel it from outside. That's when they claim life begins. And of course, that's not true. Life begins at conception. That's clear. The Bible tells us clearly. But our fight and our argument right now, we have to take it one step. But, you know, as we're putting this paper together, maybe we need to go the whole way. Maybe we can't afford to go halfway. You know, our founding fathers did that. They went halfway with slavery. They allowed slavery in certain areas, and they allowed it to continue. And it did nothing but curse this nation. And that's the sin of our fathers, and we've paid for that. God speaks about paying for the sins of our parents. And we indeed did pay for those sins. And, you know, by God's mercy, it appears that he has saved us at the last moment. Because if you look at history of what's been going on in this country, and to see the people who have controlled us and taken control over this nation and actually the whole world, we were about ready to go down. If Hillary Clinton would have been elected president, we would not. I don't think we'd be talking on the internet anymore. You know, we've been looking at this possibility coming up, but it seems stronger than ever that this was the end game right here. Nevertheless, she didn't win, and we have this almost a miracle. I mean, this guy comes out of left field, totally groomed for the position, totally it seems to be clean as a whistle. They can't get nothing on this guy. I'm talking, of course, of President Trump. He seems to be the perfect position, perfect person to deal with the problems that we have today. And he seems to be making great headway. Anybody that's following very closely, he's making great headway. And so here we have all of a sudden sort of a King Cyrus. I heard about this some months ago, maybe a year or two ago, and I went to read about King Cyrus, and I agree 100%. President Trump is a type of a King Cyrus. You know, King Cyrus came out of left field and freed the Jews from Babylon. You know, he didn't have to do that, but he did. And he wasn't necessarily a godly man. But nevertheless, here we are saved by the bell. I mean, at the last moment, God raises up an individual like a King Cyrus and starts to take these people down. Of course, I believe he's preparing the world for judgment. You know, nations will be judged first. The Bible tells us that. I've been wondering and looking for that, but I think that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing nations being judged. We're going to see the downfall of the deep state, the draining of the swamp, the incarcerations and the necessary hangings of individuals who are guilty of treason. And so we can't go halfway. We have to go all the way. Abortion is evil. It's a sin. And we have to make that point very clear and show it very clear. It's unconstitutional because we, the people, did this not only for ourselves and secure this, and it's to secure this, the blessings of liberty. The job of government is to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. And that word posterity means even those in the womb and those who have come out. And so we got to make this clear. And also we need to take a stand when children are a person. They become a living soul the moment of conception. No doubt in my mind of it, you have an individual in there. And besides that, God put them there. Who are we to go up and take God's work out and do what we do and murder the work of God? Who are we to do that? What kind of blessings are we going to have if we allow that to continue in our nation? We have to take a stand. So we will do a paper. We're working on it. And it will be an information directed directly to the governor of the state of New York. I know, and also to all these people in Congress, we're going to take a position that to hold these people responsible, all those who have voted for this, to hold them responsible, potentially guilty of what would the word be? Not murder itself, but I'm looking for the word here. All right, I can't find it. But anyway.
Accessory.
Yes, an accessory. Accessory before or after, either way. Of course, they would be, in both cases, I think we can probably build the position of this. But if an individual, if an abortionist goes and kills a baby, by just pulling that baby out of the mother's womb, laying it on a table somewhere in some dark room to die and cry until it dies, and this gets reported, I think we have a duty to consider an indictment on that doctor, an indictment of all people involved, and an indictment of all the individuals in the legislation here in New York, including the governor, as an accessory to murder. But anyway, we'll see how we can put this together, but we definitely have to do something. We can't let it stand, and we must stand for truth and righteousness, and we can't do it halfway. I know it's extreme. It appears to be extreme in our mindset because what we've become used to, you know, this Roe versus Wade's been around, I think it was since 1973. I remember back when the arguments and the debates were taking place. I was young, but I heard the adults around me. You know, I was probably 17, 18 or something like that. And I heard the adults talking around me, making this debate about abortion. It was around, in my mind, in my household, in my neighborhood, and anyone that I ever heard, they all said it was murder. They all said that abortion should not be legalized in any way, shape, or form. And yet they did, okay? It's unconstitutional. It's a violation against God. It's a violation that all against anything that is holy. It's a violation against mankind, against humanity. And it's an assault. And so we can't take half a stand. We have to take a full stand. But, of course, it'll be up to the people in a jury to decide, you know, whether an individual should be indicted. And it also is up to the trial jury to decide the guilt or innocence of that individual and what that should be. And that could be different, maybe, I don't know. But I think, you know, look, if we start to respect life and recognize who the judge of the universe is, who the king of the court is, then we'll start making the right decisions. And again, 12 people coming together, I think, could come to a good agreement on the solution and the problem and solve it. But certainly it can't be decided by one person. I don't know how many thousands of abortions that have taken place. And, you know, there's something more here than this. I was thinking about this. You know, we have a lot of people coming into this nation, into our states. They're coming illegally. And often they'll come in with families, and often they'll have families here. And, you know, they have large families. You know, in America, we used to have large families, but they've got this Planned Parenthood and all this other stuff. I mean, when I was younger, if you had 5 kids, that was like the average, so it seemed. I knew a lot of people had a lot more than that. But that seems to dwindle down to some people having none or one or two. And so, you know, the American mindset, the individual born in this nation to parents who are Americans that have the American mindset, whether they understand the Constitution or not, whether they have a relationship personally with God or not, they have a mindset that's delivered down to them from their fathers and their forefathers and so on. And we have this belief and understanding of liberty. Even though we may not know the Constitution, we may not know the Bill of Rights, we know that we have liberty. We know that we're free. At least we think we are. And we know that there is a God, whether we have a relationship or not with him. And we know that there's hell to pay at the end of the day, okay? Whether we think about it or not, when we do think about it, and especially when people get older, they do think about it a lot more because they get closer to that day. But nevertheless, we have to do something. And we have the American mindset, in my opinion, is being destroyed, you know. That's why they want these open borders. Number one, to get a lot of votes, because these people are voting. I was reading something concerning the numbers. I forget the numbers were, but they were huge, the amount of people that are voting that are not, you know, citizens or they're not citizens of the United States. They're not people who were born here. They're not. They don't have the American mindset. And, of course, they owe their allegiance to the Democrats and that mindset that brings them in. They owe their allegiance to them, so that's where their vote goes. So you have a lot more people coming into this country, and they were not born here. So they don't think like we do. They don't have that liberty delivered to them through their parents and their foreparents. They have a different background, a different place where they come from whatever country it is that they may come from. And that's destroying everything that we are. And so we got to stop this. We can't permit it to go forward. And woe is us if we don't. We've been cursed already. We allowed slavery, and look what it done to us. We're still paying for it. Right up to this day, we're still paying for it. and God knows how much longer we'll continue to pay for it. But it could have been stopped. It could have been stopped, but a few people didn't have backbones in those days, unfortunately, and they went through and they compromised. Certain places you cannot compromise. You can't compromise on morality. The moment we compromise on morality, we lose it all. We no longer have the blessings of liberty. All right, anyway, that's my two cents on this situation taking place here in New York. Gerard, back to you.
Yeah, and you know what, John? I don't see, you know, they keep splitting hairs and they get worse and worse. And, I mean, I don't see any difference of letting a baby die outside the womb as delivering the whole baby except for the head and doing a partial birth abortion because the head's still inside. It's just barbaric.
Soon you'll get the terrible twos and decide to put them to death. Why not? Hey,
right,
they've taken
right. And I think there was language in the original Roe versus Wade. Brett probably knows better than I do, but they said something about right now with the knowledge that we have, with the science that's available, they said, but this could change if science can prove that life begins earlier. I think there was a caveat in the Roe versus Wade. Well, we do know that life begins at conception, and even their electron microscopes show a spark of light at the moment of conception. They've caught it. So we have more knowledge than we did back then, and yet we're making them go later and later. It doesn't even make sense. So instead of the knowledge bringing us closer to the truth, we're getting further and further away. We're ignoring the facts that we have.
You know, but that also turns on its head the principles of law that we have. One of the major principles of law that we have is an individual is innocent until proven guilty. Well, I say unto them, that child is alive, a human being, is a living soul until you can prove that it's not. The burden should not be on the people that we have to prove a life and allow that murder to go through, and until then, those murders will go through. No, we have to take it and bring it back to the other direction. It's not the burden of proof is on them. If they want to take a life, well, you better prove it's not a life first. And they can't do that. We have plenty of scriptures that tells us that it is a life. It's a life at conception. I mean, you know, there's plenty of verses that will build that case. And also, God calls them infants and children right after the moment of conception. God refers to them as a child and the fruit of the womb and an infant. So right there, you know, we go back to the Maker. Remember, we're a Christian nation, and you know, and anyone can participate and be part of the United States and be part of even being elected to office, whether they believe in God or not. But we have to maintain ourselves as a Christian nation because that's where we come from and that's where we get our liberty from. And remember, our liberty, our rights, are unalienable rights, and that means it comes from God, from the Creator. And once you lose that principle, then you lose it all. And of course, they want to give us civil rights, which is statutory rights. They want to give us the rights of the 14th Amendment, which is a huge problem. Although the 14th Amendment, which I recently have been studying and looking at, I do see the need for that. You know, unfortunately, because of the sins of our father with slavery, because of the problems that took place, I saw the logic and the need for the 13th Amendment and even the 14th Amendment. And but at the same time, there's language in there that is so destructive that they try to use. And I always notice every time in court, whenever anybody makes a reference, even the United States Supreme Court recently, they always refer to the 14th Amendment. Why the 14th Amendment? There's plenty of others, the Bill of Rights, plenty of others in the Bill of Rights that they could refer to and be a lot stronger on. But they go to the 14th Amendment. And I believe there's a reason for that, because therein is the way and the reason why they have hidden common law courts from us. They've closed the doors and sealed them up, and we can't find them. We can't get access. We can't find access into a court of law anymore, meaning under natural law. But anyway, back to you, Gerard.
Okay. It looks like we got Winthrop back in the queue, so I'm going to open you up, Winthrop. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Yeah, I got a statement and I got a question. Anton Scalia back in 2015 was sitting in front of Trey Gowdy, and Trey Gowdy asked the judge, what does he do when he comes across an unconstitutional law? And he says he ignores it. And so he says, he told Trey Gowdy, he says, no, you take the same oath that I take, so you get first crack at it. And the question is, when he says he ignores it, does that mean that does it become law, or it's not published as being law and they're just ignoring it? And cases that are heard in the lower courts, you know, get heard and they don't get up to the Supreme Court to be heard to be unconstitutional. See what I'm saying?
Well, when he says he ignores it, I think what he's referring to is any law that's repugnant to the Constitution is no law. So he can't take that law into consideration when he's adjudicating a case, because it conferred no power or authority. So he cannot consider that law as a basis for making a decision on anything. That's what I think, and that's my opinion. In other words, you're allowed to ignore an unconstitutional law. As a matter of fact, you're supposed to ignore it.
Yeah, I kind of took it the same way, too. So.
But is that unconstitutional? Because he ignores it. Is it published? I mean, is it still published?
It doesn't matter. It can publish anything. If a law is unconstitutional, it offers no power. It's like it never was. That's what the law. I think that was, wasn't that Marbury versus Madison? It says no.
Yeah, that was Marbury versus Madison, 1802.
Read the language of Marbury versus Madison, and it explains what Scalia is talking about. It doesn't matter if it's published and it's on the book.
I don't think that was Scalia.
What do you do when you come across a law that's unconstitutional? And he says he ignores it.
If somebody's bringing the law up saying it's unconstitutional, he has to rule on that particular case.
He's got to rule on the positions before him. And if the positions before him are brought up that are unconstitutional, unlawful, maybe I think in the explanation of the decision, that should be brought up and addressed, that he took that into consideration, but then he denied it because it's not lawful, and give the reason why and move on. So that's probably what I think Winthrop is talking about, how is it that, what does he do with it? And that's what they probably should, that's what they should do, as a matter of fact. You know, when you read this stuff, even with the decisions that this judge made on us, okay, here in the gun case in New York, which is still in court, still in the courts. And by the way, we have filed papers recently on our original case, and they're still accepting them. We're still in the court. Doesn't matter what they've written and what they said. They're taking our papers, and they better keep taking our papers, and they know they need to take our papers because it's unlawful for them not to do. But even with that decision that guy gave us, he went through every step and every point and made the point on what he accepted, what he didn't accept, and why, and this, that, the other thing. Now, there may have been some points that they didn't cover, but that's how it should be, and I think that's what he's talking about. Is that what you're talking about, Winthrop?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Yeah. But I agree with Gerard that perception is the way I would have taken what his position was, that he ignores it. But to see how he would write it would be interesting. Maybe that's what we need in a case.
I don't believe a judge can strike down an unconstitutional law unless it's brought before him as unconstitutional. But when he's deciding a case, he needs to ignore any law that he knows in his heart is unconstitutional. He needs to ignore that. In other words, he cannot take that law into consideration because it's unconstitutional.
But he should also address that. but he should also address that in his decision or her decision. They should address the fact that I didn't take this into consideration because it's unlawful.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like that decision.
And show why, you know, definitely should show. Look, this should be a teaching thing, you know. But that's one of the things about Bill Thornton's positions and some of the things that he teaches is that always make it a lesson, make it a teaching, teach them something, because you want to make clear what you're saying. And so that's what they should be doing. They should be teaching us the law through their decisions. But some of these decisions I read, they bore me to tears, and I don't know. But anyway.
That case that Gail Prudente quoted us, and we read the decision, you know, it was like a 5-4 decision. Well, the one judge that wrote the dissenting opinion, he said, look, this is an unconstitutional position you five are making. Remember, we wrote back, we said, we agree with the dissenting judges because they're right and you're wrong, right? Because that judge laid out the reasons it was unconstitutional in the dissenting positions, and he did a good job, too. I mean, you know, after reading that, I don't know how those other judges could have went with it, because he called them out on every step of the way. I mean, there was nothing for them to stand on, but they did it anyway because it was a political decision for them.
That is so.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think we beat this to death, but, you know. Anyway, is that it? I'll move on to, we got Crystal in the queue, so I'll move on, Winthrop, if we're done.
Oh, yeah, before we take Crystal, hang on a second. Brent, are you still here?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Brent's still here. Did you get a chance to read those papers yet? I don't know whether you can comment here, or maybe we can talk later or tomorrow.
No, I did, and I sent a message to you.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
I think I sent it last night, so it's there. You can look at it. And if you want to talk further, we can get together. I know you called. I saw where you did try to contact me the other night, and I didn't respond. So we'll get together if we need to, though. You listen to what I've said. I thought
read
it was great.
I'll take it from there. Excuse me?
I said it looked great what I saw, and I included the standard that I found there. You can look at it and see if it makes sense to you.
Yeah, I'll go through your comments. If we need to talk, I'll give you a call. If not, I want to try to get it out to Crystal. So, okay, appreciate it. Thanks. Okay, go ahead. Unmute Crystal.
Okay. Go ahead, Crystal. You're unmuted. If we didn't bore you to sleep. Are you there? Crystal.
Hello.
There you go. Good morning.
By the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6-1. There's no one in the queue right now except Crystal. So if you want to ask her, should I make
it? Yeah, can you hear me?
Go ahead, Crystal.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi, hold on one second. Hold on one second.
Uh-oh. What happened? Did we lose her?
I think she was talking to someone and muted us. No, she fell out. Yeah. I don't see her.
Yeah, she fell out. Yeah.
All right. Well, you got the mic. I don't know if you got anybody. We have nobody else in the queue. So if anybody wants a question or a comment, star 6. Otherwise, Gerard's going to find something to entertain us with.
Yeah. What, you want to hear my construction problems? They're not as complicated as somebody's law problems, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to comment on a thing that we were talking about earlier with this case here in New York, and the gun case also still in play, and so we still got things going, and of course we have our course up there. People need to be taking the course. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. And if we don't get enough people to get rid of their ignorance and be able to get educated well enough to be able to articulate themselves in the processes that we have and take control of the consent of our government on both the political and the judicial levels in your county, if we don't find people to do that, we're going to lose it. We're just going to go right back to where we just came from, because the hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? Believe me, people seek power and authority, and they'll keep taking more and more and more until we find ourselves back into being statutorily incarcerated and eventually physically and literally. Okay, Crystal's back, by the way.
All right, I'm going to open her up. Okay, Crystal, you're on mute. You there?
Yes, hi. How you doing? Sorry.
Hey, good. That's okay.
Yeah. Well,
what's
I was
going on?
Okay, what a day, what a day. I was in court today, and boy, the attitudes of the people in the court, totally different. I was on TV again this week, and also I sent you some stuff over, John, about the proof on the deed.
Okay, yeah, I think you sent it to me through Jan, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And those are the copies of the deeds and everything that my house property paid for.
Yes, I know. Look, I got the paperwork done. I got it perfected. Jan perfected it. And we have some comments by Brent on it, so I'll go through that in the morning. And then I'll get it all brought together. I got you a paper, a petition to move it into the federal court. Because, and also a preliminary injunction, okay, which we'll get into details on that. I'll get it to you by email, to that email that you gave me, and then we'll call you, let you know that it's there, and then you can go through it, and if there's any errors, anything that we misunderstood, anything that is not true, or something you really feel that we need to add, just write on the page. And whatever pages you added or took away something on, those are the only pages you need to get back to us so we can repair it and get it back for final service and you can file it. But go ahead and tell us more information about what took place in court and what your feelings and what's their attitude and what are you thinking?
Okay, well, what happened? Because of the letter I got from court, they stated that they changed, well, I told you they changed the deeds and everything to my property. And this is where I got them. Last week when I went to the court to get the copy of my deed and stuff, I noticed that my foreclosure, that it was on the 19th, which was a national holiday in Martin Luther King, and courts and everything are closed. That whole weekend, they cannot do any kind of transaction. So what they did do, they changed everything the day before the foreclosure, the auction, on the 18th. You can't change that because it didn't even occur. All right? That was the first thing. Second,
and you brought this up to them in court?
I didn't bring anything up to them in court.
Okay, good.
No, absolutely not. You know?
Uh-huh.
Then when I went back on Thursday, because I found this out last Wednesday, when I went back on Thursday, because I forgot to get the deed, you know, the deed that I wanted all the property, when I got there that morning, they deleted the first 15 years that I owned the property and all the transactions. I said, excuse me, I said, what is going on with the land records? And all of a sudden they started whispering. They go, oh, there's a misdemeanor. I said, I want this printed out right now. So I got the proof of that. Then all of a sudden I said, this is criminal. I said, somebody just tampered with legal documents. You can't do that. So they started, well, they got all nervous and everything, but I got my copies. And then all the paperwork that I had submitted in the court, they turned around and sent that back. But this is how foolish. They was stamped and they crossed it out. I had other papers to submit. And so I said to the, because I had this other papers, the and I was going to submit the papers back into the judge's hands. And she goes, oh, you're not supposed to be here today. Oh, no, this is a mistake. No, you sent me the letter and stated that, quote, unquote, from the attorneys, and I said their names, that yous are going to agree and change the title and give me the date, how many days I could be at the house first. And so she goes, no, no. The other attorneys didn't even show up. Meanwhile, because everybody's had seen me on TV because they've been doing coverage on me for, again, this past Saturday. So I'm on the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut station. All righty? People are pouring in and calling in about. And so many people are like, wait a second. So I guess some people took the liberty on their own because they knew who I was from the past. And I helped so many people because that's the work I did. And they said, oh, my God. So they found out the exact same thing, what I was saying all along. So now everybody heard about this attorney that killed his mother. And it's a national alert, and they're looking for this attorney who had ripped off over 17 people on their real estate, trustees, and all that. And he had gotten disbarred. He was to be sentenced, I guess, 3 to 5 years. They let his bail was only $5,000. They let him out with the ankle bracelet, and he ended up killing his mother. Well, honey, let me tell you something. Everybody was going off in court about the crooks of all these attorneys. So that was like a big star. And a lot of people, it was a light switch that lit up on people because it's been happening to all the people. And so different ones said, oh, we saw you on TV and what have you. And then some people that I knew personally that was in there, I said, first of all, don't you ever sit here and speak to any of these attorneys by yourself when they're the ones who are going to decide to take your property or whatever. So I said, when she asks you something, you don't understand, but the question you're going to ask the judge in front of everybody, and you make sure you get your transcript, is, I would like a common law jury. You know, anything over $20, you can have, ask for a common law jury. And that's what I was telling everybody today. Ask for a common law jury. You know? The judge was much nicer to the people today. Well, you know, you can discuss it or decide what have you. But the attorneys that wanted to bring me there, none of them ended up showing up at all. Then they tried to tell me that I wasn't on the docket or whatever. So I said, you know, I'm not going to argue with her about it. Because she was being cordial, very cordial at this point, you know. And she goes, well, why don't you go home? She goes, you don't look all that well. She goes, I said, okay, thank you. Have a good day. I shouldn't have been there. But that's why I sent everything over to you.
Do they have a date or anything that's set for you for trying to take you home or anything like that?
Nobody was there. She goes, oh, something happened. I have an idea but it was just like, she act like, no, they didn't say nothing about no date. Nothing about, they didn't even bring up the foreclosure. You know?
You would think that they would want to get you out of court, wouldn't you? I mean, they're too stupid to exit here, huh, John? They don't know how to exit now? They're that arrogant? Because,
well, you know.
She's getting some publicity.
Huh?
Yeah.
You're a thorn in their side, Crystal. Usually this is how you win without winning. They get rid of the case because it's causing them too much embarrassment. And not only embarrassment, somebody's going to end up in jail over this eventually if they keep it up. You know? You would think that they would give you some kind of remedy and just drop the case.
Because, yeah,
I mean, does it really pay for them to drag you through it?
Under the Foreign Agent Act, too. Because when President Trump shut down the government, They literally have no jurisdiction because none of them are under the Foreign Agent Act of 1938. And so they're basically, they're without them not being filed, which I did send them those papers. Also, I believe I sent it to you, too, John. If they are not registered, they literally and legally have no jurisdiction whatsoever. And what they are, it's penalty of perjury what they're doing. It's treason. And it's like one time I think I remember what I'm saying. They can't even convict a fly. If there are, everything's false, what they're doing. So, you know, and I keep on, and I, you know, tell everybody, the parents, everybody, to go under NLA, you know, and start learning, you know, who's the highest person in the court. I mean, so people are now picking up, like, because I said, I'm going to sit here and explain everything to you. I said, you know, the work I've done in the past, I said, this is like 40, 49 years of work experience. Plus, I've been learning and stuff like that, you know, through the NLA. And, you know, we've been all helping and teaching each other on things. But I said, it's so, so important. And the parents, and I've been telling the parents, you definitely all need to be involved with this, especially for your children in the school system. Because it's accurate knowledge in what you're going to be learning, you know? I mean, they took out the cursive writing and all this other stuff, you know, for whose purpose. And I said, look at how wicked and criminal these attorneys are. I said, for example, even with that Trayvon incident, when they asked the girl who was the one who was a witness on the phone, and the attorney said, read this. And she said, I can't. What did the judge, what did the attorney say? He goes, and you're asking her as a credible witness, and she can't even read? No, it's not that she couldn't read. She didn't know how to read cursive writing. Well, they have taken out cursive writing in the schools. We were all taught to write in print and cursive, you know? And I remember when I used to work, and some people didn't even know how to sign their name, and it would be by the X, or I would sit there and help with all the paperwork, you know. So this is why when people want to control other people and what have you, it's through that education. How, and then you sit there and say, you want to teach me, but you don't like me, and you're going to, look what they're doing to our children all over, you know. The computers, the games. These kids, without they can't sit there and even ask on an adding machine. They have to put the number or the food item because they can't count up or subtract or whatever. And I said, this is a travesty. You know, we got to teach these children everything we know. Because remember, these kids, all these children, are going to be the ones to be making the decisions for us after a while. And, like, when I went to Social Security, oh, my God, what a nightmare. Total, total nightmare. No one knows their job, and they're giving everybody the same standard answer for everything. This is a travesty, again, you know? And everybody needs to hold all their politicians, their senators, their Congress, their feet right to the fire. What are you doing? How, it's like when they sit there and complain, excuse me, about Trump. I said, well, let me say this. I said, yes, he has a mouth at times. And he said, you know, but and a lot of things that come out of his mouth is not nice. But he's only been in there 2 years. What has been happening to us for the past 20, 30, 40 years for all the people that have been in there? I said, you know what? I said, one thing for sure, he gave everybody food for thought. And as I said, and after a while, you know, when we sit there and go and ask those same people who's been there, well, wait a minute, why were we all losing our homes? Who signed our names to change the title? Who signed the deeds or what have you? Or, you know, like when you sign a contract, you know, when you're in a fixed rate or whatever, they turn around and change our deeds. That's criminal. And see, that was the first thing. Who signed my name? Who authorized that? Because I'm the one who did my mortgage. This is what I want, fixed rate for 15 years. No prepaid penalty, you know. And these are the things people need to be aware of, you know. And it was funny because I got a letter from Mr. GE Credit Union about some kind of credit bill. Excuse me, no year, no date or nothing on it. So I guess this was another little way to try to harass me or whatever the case is. So I got to respond to that tomorrow. But this is just so, it's just unbelievable. But anybody who goes into court from now on, make sure. I would like a common law jury. And when you say it, they got to put it in a transcript. I'd like to see what their answer and their response is going to be now. You know? And I think
like John says, they take these judges and they bring them into these classes and they fill their head full of stuff. So, you know, as far as they're concerned, you know, I believe the judges believe that you don't warrant or deserve a jury because they have you in a contract type of a relationship, that you've given them authority to do this through commercial law. That's what they're telling them. And so they don't care about your common law grand jury. The biggest fear that they have is that too many people will come in and ask for it, and they won't be able to defend not giving it to you. Right now, they're defending it because they believe that they have you in some kind of a contract situation, and that's how he covers his conscience when he rules against you. You know,
but
because,
you know what?
Because,
that's what they thought they were doing. That's what they thought they were doing. Again, that's what when people were asking, asking for a common law jury. These are, you know, when people sit there and talk, I said, well, ask them for a jury. You know, pass it on. And believe you me, it's getting out. You know,
well, look, they're not any smarter than the rest of us. They had the same stupid public school education. So
right.
The guys that are running this stuff are no better than the people they're using it against, most of them. So that's why you're getting abuses because everybody's stupid, you know, and the guys administering this aren't any better. Matter of fact, they're worse because they've been pushing the envelope for years and getting away with it.
And getting away with it.
I think you're going to have better luck when you get to the federal court because, you know, those district court judges, 50 of them, in the district courts, a lot of them in New York State have been changed. That Donald Trump has put in, you know, a whole bunch of new district judges that he told them they have to go by the rule of law. So you may have a better chance pulling this thing into the federal court because you might actually get a judge that's going to rule more constitutional than you would have got, you know, 2 or 3 years ago even.
Wait a minute, Connecticut hasn't changed anything, have they?
Well, he's done, I don't know how far it goes. A lot of them in New York were changed. It was 50-something district court judges, so that's more than just New York, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. So it's just that once those 50 judges are in there, you see, you might do better in Connecticut, too, because the word's going to get around. So the ones that he hasn't changed, they're going to take notice of the ones that he did change. And I think he concentrated on New York because you have Schumer and Pelosi and all these other evil people down there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the point of the spear for him. So, you know, look, if he can change New York, Connecticut's the next one. You know, you're right there. You're close.
You're right. You're right.
You're in the same evil system, and they all know each other, you know.
Right.
As a matter of fact, some of these federal prosecutors and judges can operate in any court of the United States. That's why they have Huber in Utah is going to do indictments over here in New York because he's able to, and it's better that he's not in New York and that he's picking grand juries that are not from New York. And that because you get people like Schumer and that, if they want to indict him, they can't indict him in New York. You know, they have too much control over there. They got too much influence, so they'll take that and they'll get a grand jury in Utah. I guess you can argue, well, that's not their peers, but they are. They're American citizens, you know, and they'll indict them through Utah because apparently their jurisdictions does cross at the federal level from state to state. So I don't know. To me, that should help your situation. I think you need to get it out of this local court and bring it into the federal court. And the federal judge is not going to stick his neck out from these jackass lower guys that are running amok, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
I mean,
see,
look at how many laws they've broken on your just on your case.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if I was a federal judge, I wouldn't stick my neck out for him.
No, and see, that's what a lot of them were looking at, too, because they said, you know what, you were the only one who was up with her all these years, and you didn't have an attorney, and you stood your ground, and you had four judges that already recused themselves from your case. You had four different groups of the law firms that said, forget it, and ones that I have nothing to do with this woman, and then even to the wireline ones who started the mess, then they brought this other group in a few months ago, and they just went and said, we're sick and tired. I said, first of all, I have never seen you before a day in my life until just now. My life is worth more than $20, and yet you are going to sit there and take my property? What investment did you have? I don't recall you ever making one cent. And also, by them changing this deed records, which I'm going to, oh, God, I was going to do that today, but I didn't get a chance because I was dealing with all this stuff. I got to go back because if I lose all my elderly disability exemptions on my taxes, oh, they haven't seen nothing yet, you know, because, you know, and also they said that they had changed the records and my house went into foreclosure. Who has the property? Mr. GE. Now they want 100. First, they said, I bought my house for $157 in 2000. They want me to pay them $161,000. And it goes to the attorneys. Under what investment? Talk about highway crime and criminal. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I said, totally illegal, unconstitutional. And all the letters and the affidavits that I've been asking them, you know, to recuse themselves, to dismiss, to discharge. And they had ample time to do all that. You know, so like they said, well, they were using you as an example because, you know, they said that I was, they said, I was belligerent and I was hostile. And I said, no, they couldn't say that about me because I was never disrespectful. I was never hostile. I always said, I swear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, Jehovah God, Jesus Christ, and Holy Spirit, I pray. And watch over me, Jehovah. Thank you. And then I would state my name. I am the authorized representative of, and I would state my name. And then whatever they would sit there and say at the end of it, I would say, thank you and have a good day. I said they never could ever say I was ever rude, nor was I ever disrespectful. You know? And they said, well, yeah, you always did. I said, people used to get mad and say, why is she thanking them? You know? Mm. And two wrongs is not going to make a right. And like in the beginning, in Proverbs, beginning of wisdom is fearing Jehovah God. Fear no man. And Jehovah God will always lead our path. You know? Because did Satan ever lead the blind? Satan is leading the blind. So they all think they're some kind of God themselves, so, you know.
Well, if you're quoting the Bible at them, they consider that belligerent. that's your belligerence right there.
No, it's not like that. But I said, I swear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you know. No, I'm quoting the Bible to you. I did not quote the Bible to them.
But you say Jehovah God and Jesus Christ in open court, that makes the hair stand up on the back.
Oh, yeah, well,
neck.
I bring my Bible. Well, I'm not going to go in the house of Satan. Are you kidding? I'm not crazy now. Come on.
And that's why they won't let you go because you've stricken at the heart of evil, and like you said, they don't want to let you win. They want to make an example out of you.
But they're not my God.
You've embarrassed them already. They should be embarrassed enough to slink away in some dark corner before they get hurt.
Well, you know what? As I said, only Jehovah God can read the heart. And as I said, I don't wish, even as bad as they are, I wish nothing bad on anyone. Because like in Psalms 37, chapter 11, do not do evil, do us for evil, because we're no better than that person who's doing evil to you. You know?
Yeah.
And so, but, you know,
yeah.
that's
anyway.
Where it stands, and I will just, you know, I just wanted to share that with you.
Well,
it's
we
been
appreciate
mentally,
that.
It's been mentally, physically exhausting, and I got a lot of wonderful support. And we just want to make sure everybody starts learning and get involved with NLA because it's been so, so helpful. And
it's very important for people to follow and to join in with that because there's power in numbers. And the other thing is people should be praying for you because there's a power in prayer. And that's one of the reasons I think that they're so vicious right now because the morality of the country has turned against them, and people are actually praying to turn things around, and so they have to redouble the evil because they need a certain amount of evil around them in order to succeed. I believe that there's an actual, you know, force there that. You know, once it reaches a certain critical mass, God's gonna stick his fingers, and he already has. His fingers are in there right now. And the more people that mention you in their prayers, you're gonna see power in that. And that's the only way you're gonna beat them, because what you're dealing with, I believe, is pure evil. These guys that are doing things, they may not be doing things consciously, but they're doing the will of evil unconsciously, and I mean they know it, but they're not thinking about it. And you know, is it full consent of their will? They say, well, that's the way we always did it. You know what I mean? They'll make excuses, they'll rationalize, but it doesn't excuse them. Just like in Nuremberg, when they said we were following orders, and they ended up hanging them, because there's certain orders that you're just not allowed to. You're not allowed to follow orders of men. You know, it wasn't God that ordered them. It was men that ordered them. So if a man is ordering you, you have to consider the fact that he's fallible. He's not infallible. And if he's telling you to do something that is sin, that is illegal, unlawful, then you have a duty not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so
also,
by you being in there, what you're doing is you're turning the light on that. Yeah, go ahead.
I when all that mess had happened, I did file the police report. And there were some other papers I brought to the police department. And I said, he said, protect my assets. And I brought the package to them because the court refused. And see, I did call first when all this happened, when they sent the police to my house pertaining to this. I said, well, where is the sheriff? Where is the warrant? Where is the paper, sir? I never received not one shred of evidence. That's when they took off out of my property. And so then I did receive a call from the police department, and I asked to speak to the chief. And so this guy who called back, and he was like, you know, talking all, yeah, well, this is right, and you can't do anything, and da-da-da-da-da. Oh, really? I said, and you do know the constitutional laws and dot, dot, dot. Well, he went on, and I said, and okay, I said, and so this is, so I said to the chief, no, this is not, I'm the assistant, oh, really? I didn't ask to speak to you, I don't even know who you are. I said, but you're the one who's speaking in behalf, so what I did, I bought the package, these packages, and I brought it to them. I said, this is not a complaint to you, but this is a law where you have to protect my assets, not me, my assets. And this is what was served to the court, and they refused, and things were taken out of my file and records, you know? And so the cop who took it, I said, well, I'd like to, he goes, well, he's busy right now. Can I speak to his assistant? She's busy. Okay. Well, here, you can leave this package, and you sign off on this for me, please. And he goes, well, I'm not going to sign off on this. And he started reading on the front because it said private and confidential. I said, you could do what you want. I said, and I got his name, and I left. I said, you have a wonderful day. You know? But,
That's like John was saying. You got to do it. You got to do a complaint with a sworn affidavit, and they got, and that, mm-hmm. that puts them on the hook for not doing their job. Then,
yeah.
But anyway,
because there was no sheriff or nothing like that, and it was
doesn't Connecticut not have sheriffs, Crystal?
Yeah, but you know what? These idiot sheriffs don't know their job, and they're.
They got a figurehead sheriff, is that, or appointed sheriff? Is that what you're?
I think they were appointed. They ran for, yeah. But it's like the three of them I try to speak to. They, are you kidding? They're the worst sellouts than ever.
Yeah.
You know, they could be in big trouble. And I said, do you realize your title and what your job is? You know, it's just like with the people on the Common Council and Board of it. I said, you know. Be careful what you sign off on, because whatever goes down, you are the one who's going to be held liable for it. I said years ago when I worked back in the 70s, I remember the ones that signed off on it, the ones who told them to sign off on it, because they didn't sign off on it. It was the ones they gave that title to, they signed off on it, and the feds came and took them right to jail. You know, when in doubt, check it out. I said, it's terrible.
Yeah, well, you're asking a lot of uncomfortable questions. Well, look, we got only a few minutes left, and we got another person in the queue, so
okay.
I want to go ahead and open them up. It's been good. Thank you, Crystal. God bless, and we'll all keep you in our prayers because I think that's important, too. Okay?
Well, thank you very much, and likewise. Good evening.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Good night. We have a number here with no name. I'm going to unmute. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
I can. Who are you? What's your first name?
Okay, yes, that's right. My name is James, and the last name is Lico, L-I-C-O. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard any, well, maybe there were, and I don't know. I'm a targeted individual, and by that I mean I'm, been apparently targeted by the government, by our government, and I am chased by contractors who seem to be like bounty hunters, and they get lots of money to chase people around who are on this terror watch list and shoot them with directed energy weapons. And it's a hard thing to explain, and I have... been trying to rationalize this in my mind, and I can't really. I'm an elderly man. I'm 67 years old, and
You're young.
yeah, right. Well, you know, when you're getting shot with directed energy weapons, you don't feel so young. So what I'm asking this question, why are terror watch lists actual real terror watch list filled to the brim, actually filled with single moms, pensioners, disabled people, U.S. veterans who are being targeted with military weapons by the police, by the military, and by the intelligence agencies. So that every single government organization is targeting the innocents, and those innocents on the terror watch lists are on the terror watch list. So who in the hell, if all of these government organizations are involved, then which government organizations precisely created those terror watch lists and have some kind of mechanism or procedure for putting people on those terror watch lists?
Let me just say, first of all,
they seem to be all a bunch of criminals run by criminals in those organizations.
Absolutely. First of all, most of those organizations are not even lawful. The CIA doesn't even belong in existence. It should be dismantled and done away with. The FBI is not much better. You know, they don't even really have a charter. This is that deep state New World Order. Everybody's on some kind of list. I know I am. It's getting to the point that the list is almost useless because there's so many people on it. They should make a list of who's not on it, in my opinion. I always tell everybody, if you're not on the list, you're nobody of mine, because everybody's on a list of one sort or another. I mean, and I don't necessarily think they're out shooting everybody with directed energy weapons, but if you're making waves and you're making trouble, they'll deal with you, and then that's what happens. I think they have lots of methods of torturing you and making, you know, like you said, you become a targeted individual. Not everybody on those lists is necessarily targeted, but when you become a person of interest, they pull your stuff up. They know everything about you. They know where you live. You walk around with a cell phone. It's got GPS on it. You know, we're almost like our own worst enemies because they get a lot of stuff because of what we do. And I mean, if you really want to hide and you think they're after you, you can't use any modern conveniences. It's bad. The best thing you can do is become more spiritual, because there's more power in the spirit of God against these people than you know, because they are the spirit of evil, and they rule with fear. And as long as you're not afraid, you're going to be surprised how much power they lose by your attitude. I'm telling you, you get more spiritual, you know, do some meditating, and you're going to find out a lot of stuff that they're going to try to use against you will not work, because the protective hand of God will come over you. Look, I couldn't go a day doing anything if I didn't think the protective hand of God was not on me. Because you can't go rattling these people's cages and think that there's no repercussions. And like Brent says, if you attack evil head on, it's going to attack back. You're going to get the brunt of it. You know, it's like you have to do some strategy with evil. There's a way of doing it, and there's a way not to do it. You know what I mean? And you could get very specific with the evil that you're fighting, and even your prayer should be specific. You should be able to call out the ones that are bothering you, and name them, and name those names. You know what I mean? And very specifically call them out and exorcise them out of your life. I'm telling you, there's a lot of power in that. You know, in Jesus' name, thank you. You know what I mean? So
I'm noticing that there's a lot of people who are ignoring the law and the rules, they're ignoring everything.
It's the whole government, I think.
I'm noticing that people are
above the law.
But I'm an activist. I'm a political activist, a peace activist, environmental activist, and I am working to open people's eyes and wake them up to all the corruption that's going on. And I'm noticing also that peace activists, political activists all over the world are doing the same thing, and they're all targeted. All the activists are targeted. So if they're all targeted, how do we expect to come out of this? And if all of us see, they're killing activists all over, you know, killing them.
Well, that's why you need to stick together. And look, at what you got to know is that the tide is turning, and that they can't kill everybody. You know what I mean? It's like you have to figure out how to deal with them. And a lot has to do with your attitude and your strategy. There's safety in numbers. I wouldn't go anywhere and do anything by myself directly. You know what I mean? If you're gonna fight them and you're gonna serve papers and stuff, if you put yourself out there in the front, then that, you know, it's like if you have a problem with somebody in the schoolyard, the bully, that's who you attack. That's who you go after, the head guy. They do the same thing. When they see somebody that's very confident, that's the guy to go after, because if they take the guy out that's the most articulate and the smartest, then they don't have to worry about everybody else. They use you as an example to keep everybody else in line. Most of the system that's out there today, it works because of fear, because we cooperate with it, because people are afraid. It's self-policing. I mean, you even have people picking up the phone like they did in communist Russia and China and reporting on their friends. That's a horrible thing, but that's what goes on. And that's the tide that we need to turn. We need to make it so that people stop cooperating with this, that it's not a popular thing to do, you know?
Mm. Yes, well, that seems to be the general logic, but they're reaching out to the leaders. They're reaching out to the people that are the loud talkers, and they're killing them. And the rest of the people, you're right, they're just being sheep, and they're hiding behind whatever, the flag. These nationalists who are doing this are, and they also call them statists. They're people who think that the government has the right to kill people. And, you know, they've always done this over the years, you know, killing the Indians, killing, you know, whoever the government says to kill, that's what they do. And it's just,
well,
we're going
to
lose.
Just remember, we outnumber them 700-1, and people are
fed up.
Yes, but
we're not doing anything. We're like the sheep that are headed towards the processing plant, and we're just walking into it. These people are all asleep. They don't know what is going on. They don't know all the corruption that's going on. They think that everything is the way they learned in school, and it's just not, you know.
Well, they don't also believe that their government would do such things. That, you know, you're making claims, they think you're crazy. They think you're crazy making claims like that. But every day, rest assured, every day another person is awakened. And they're their own worst enemy. Let me tell you why. Because they're even feeding on their own people now. The snake is eating its tail right now. I can tell you that, because I'm out there and I see a lot of different places and a lot of different people. And the internet certainly has brought us, you know, a great resource of contacting and getting a hold of and finding alternative, you know, views out. Look, information is exploding right now. We live in an information age. And so that's working against them. You know, everybody says they're going to take the internet down. I don't believe they're going to take the internet down, because they need the internet as much as we do. They can't control us. You know, if you didn't have a smartphone and this and that, they wouldn't know where you were. I mean, if we all didn't cooperate with that, we could shut them down overnight. If you took a hammer to your smartphone and we all traded Social Security cards and we never used the right number, in a week the whole system would be shot. That's all it would take. And I mean, you got to use your imagination. I mean, you say, and it wouldn't even take everybody doing it. I'm telling you, if 2% did it, they'd be done.
I think you don't know about the technology that they have that they're using on us. They're using technology that they developed in the 70s, and it's a secret. These contractors are secret contractors. They give a national security letter, and they threaten people that they're going to be, you know, fined hundreds of thousands of dollars and put in jail for, you know, years and years. And they have radar that they put on our brains, and they can track us around like we are a, you know, like you used to hear that they would track planes in the air, and the thing would move automatically and follow.
Look, everything they do has a weak point, and there's ways of resisting it, and some of it is very easy. You know, I mean, you know, they're targeting you. A lot of it is set up because of what you're eating and what you're coming in contact to. If you change your diet And you look at, you talk about tinfoil hats, a lot of stuff. One of the reasons I believe they got rid of lead paint is because they couldn't see, they went, their scanners
that,
wouldn't
see
through
the
wall.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
So look, go get yourself some lead paint. I'm telling you, don't tell me problems. I'll give you solutions. That's all there is solutions. Look, I can make you a ghillie suit with tinfoil on the outside of it, and they can't even see you with their infrared. Look, I know guys that are special forces guys. They know how to defeat all this shit, okay? So you're looking at everything they have, and you're giving them too much credit, okay? I'm telling you that the guys that are running this stuff, they're no smarter than you. They're dumber than you. And they only know
what they're told. They are much dumber. They are
and
just doing what they're told. They're order followers. But I can tell you something. Let me tell you something. This technology is very sophisticated. Before we start running it down, it's extremely sophisticated. So sophisticated that they can, with this psychotronic instrumentation, they can see through our eyes and they can hear what we hear. And
And I could defeat it with Himalayan sea salt. How's that? More sophisticated. Let me tell you something. The answers to this stuff are simple. The more sophisticated something is, the more vulnerable it is. Look at the Russians came up with a thing that made RFI noise on the front of an airplane, and they shut down a whole Regis class American destroyer, all its missiles that were designed to track everything. And they said, you know, when you make something so complicated, it's easy to shut it down. They had a thing on the front of the jet plane, looked like a Hoover vacuum cleaner, that made RFI noise that locked up all the computers in that ship. So I'm telling you that their technology is not as advanced. It's very advanced, you're right, but therein lies its weakness. And you have to put that in your head and ponder that. Now, we're out of time now. I'm giving you some hope here. You know what? You have to think outside the block. You have to be like some of the great generals and do the flanking. Don't go head on into them. Flank them. Go off to the side, and you know what I'm talking about. When you're going to fight them, you don't fight them head on. You flank them. And believe me, there's power in that. And a lot of it is your attitude. It's a whole lifestyle. It's your diet. Look at they got us eating things and doing things, and they're spraying stuff in the air, and it's coming out in our bloodstream. But there's methods of being. How do you think that they don't get that themselves? They're walking around in the same air you're walking around in. So
that's the problem. That's where the stupidity is.
Well, no, there's methods of conquering this stuff, and this is what you need to learn. This is what we need to learn. We need to stop them, but we also need to take responsibility for our own health and well-being and welfare. And the more knowledge we get, knowledge is power. And I'm telling you right now, there's lots of methodologies. There's lots of guys out there that understand this stuff and have been defeating it. And there are people that work for them that are retired. That's why they hate retired military so much, because they know their secrets. You know what I mean? They know the inside thing. And I'm telling you, much of this stuff is very easy to defeat. I could put you in a place where you wouldn't get attacked at all, when you would have complete peace. And you could go there anytime you wanted peace, and you could make yourself this place that you could just meditate.
You know, I have a bunker that I sleep in, and that doesn't work. You see, what's happening is the ELF, extremely low frequency, or it could be scalar. I don't know. I believe they're using a technology that we have never studied in school. I'm an electrical engineer, and I studied I didn't study the scalar waves, and
okay,
I think that's
what
they're using.
And
also, I want to plug my website, jamesleico.com. It's my name, JamesLico.com. Thank you for that.
Everything under the sun, there's a God gave us a remedy, I'm telling you right now. Okay.
What is your name, sir? What is your name? Hello?
He said it's jamesleico.com.
No. What is your name?
My name?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm Gerard from NLA.
Gerard in L.A.? In L.A.
I'm a co-founder with John Durash.
Okay, well, I don't know anything about the organization. Actually, just what I do want to say, I have a lot of questions, and I'm suffering badly. For the last 3 nights, they've practically murdered me, and I need to put something together to sleep in, and I'm just wondering if I could call you, and maybe you could give me some ideas. My name's Donna.
Donna.
Hi.
Okay, Donna. Just send your number to Jan, and I'll get a hold of you. There are certain things that
okay,
you can
do. Okay, I don't know
Jan. I got the number out, Jared. We got the number right out there. Take a look, and it's a 253 number.
Okay.
So just make a
well,
note.
That's James' number. That's not my number.
Well, that's okay. They can call that number.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And what's your name, Donna?
My name's Donna.
Maybe we can put her name next to that. Okay. All right. But anyway, we're out of time now, and maybe we could do something on these. We could do a paper on this or something. Okay?
It's a big problem. There's a lot of us, and I think people don't even know how many there are because many that don't even know they're targeted are targeted with these psychotronic weapons. And they're doing things that are – they're inflicting diseases and afflictions that, like, old people with old age get – like fibromyalgia, like irritable bowel disease.
Look at fibromyalgia. The doctors made that name up because they couldn't explain it. There's cure for fibromyalgia. They come
yes,
up with all these fancy
they're
names.
They're doing it with directed energy weapons.
I understand,
and
but let me tell you.
They're doing it. Oh, it works on everybody. Yeah, your structures in your body all have resonant frequencies, and they know all this. They've got people's DNA, and they're using that to target them specifically. They can burn up anything in your body, and they can make it seem like it's failing, and it's not. They're targeting people in hospitals. They're killing people.
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it right now. I mean, look, you have to be important enough for them to do that to you. This stuff doesn't work on everybody. I'm telling you right now. I know for a fact.
Oh, yes, it does.
Nah, you're wrong. There's methods around it. If it was the case, we wouldn't stand a chance. God knew what he was doing, and there's methods around this stuff, and they're not as powerful as you think they are. They're really not.
Well,
you know,
put
a little bit of shining in the tin
roof right now. They burn people up with it.
How many weapons do you think they have?
Hundreds of thousands, maybe millions.
I don't believe it. You couldn't prove it to me.
They're made in China, and they send them over here. They get the neighbors are doing this now. They train with the contractors. This is like Vietnam. It's the Phoenix program in Vietnam where they had provincial reconnaissance centers in Vietnam were the same as the fusion centers here. They perform the same function. This is genocide.
They've been infiltrated, okay? They've been infiltrated. That's all I'm going to tell you. They have good people in there right now. You should infiltrate them, but they've been infiltrated. So you have to relax and calm down and stop giving them so much credibility. That's the first step. Because you can change your resonant frequencies with your brain. I'm telling you that right now. Your brain and what God gave us is way more powerful than everything they have. You have within yourself everything that you need to battle that. That's all I'm going to tell you. Okay? And you need to discover that. And look at this technology that you're giving all this credibility to. It's only working in a certain line, and you're making a mistake by giving them too much credibility and believing that there's nothing that you can do against it, and that's absolutely not the truth. Anyway, with that, I'm going to sign off because we're over time. It's good talking to you, And
okay, I appreciate you for listening.
You're an electrical engineer. You can figure certain things out, but you need to get into the biology part too, okay?
Yes, right. I also have a degree in biology, by the way. But thank you very much.
You have more tools than anybody else I know to defeat this. If you just flank it a little bit and think outside the box, okay?
Yeah, good thinking. Thank you.
Okay, have a good night. And with that, God bless. You thank you, everybody, for coming. And we'll see you here, same time, same station, next Monday. Thank you, everybody.
All right, bye.
Yeah, bye.